Hi, Pat.
Yes, it is, Wendy.
It is so foggy. I haven't seen fog like this in years.
You've never been to London, have you?
No, sir.
It's like this all day and all night in London, every day of the year.
Honestly, no, it doesn't ever burn off.
It's a stereotype about London. It is. I mean, we get it like this a couple times a year, but today, like when I woke up this morning, you can only see a couple of feet outside your window. That's not enough.
I went out early this morning and didn't really see the fog, and then all of a sudden it rolled in like the smoke monster from Lost, and I couldn't see anything.
That's the perfect analogy.
It's a great 2011 reference, too. A lot of people get that.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm very current. What is your problem with your headphones?
They don't fit. None of the cords fit the holes. If you're a sex ed teacher, come on over and I'll help explain it to you.
I can find you a hole.
I can't.
Gosh, right, 10, 11. Okay.
I know that.
Right. Where? You, to your left.
That one?
Hi, Patsy.
I know that we have a relatively easy job. I mean, when you look at jobs, the one that
this
you and
nothing.
I have is one of the easiest jobs in the world, except for the fact that this is the third day in a row, we've been displaced. They're doing things in our studio downstairs.
Today's a fun one, though.
Today is tree time. They're making it look all Christmassy in our studio. But for some reason, even though it's just we're just in a different room, everything else is kind of the same, it's harder to do our job. I can't speak for you, but every day I come in and just little things like that. Like I couldn't find the hole to plug my headphones into.
But you're handling it like a pro. No one's noticed.
Nobody notices. Yeah.
Well, I can't keep anything silent, so I could have not said anything.
That would have been the professional way to do it.
I can't do it.
Sure.
You know me.
Yesterday, Kevin and I had the pleasure of watching. They're fixing up the studio, making it look nicer. Today it's Christmas stuff, but yesterday they were just updating things in the studio. So wouldn't you think, like, if they were in the WGN studio, what do you think they'd be listening to while they were in there doing
Hopefully
it?
Hopefully WGN.
Right? Wouldn't you think?
What were they listening to?
Kevin, back me up on this.
Okay.
Jeff Foxworthy. All day.
Well, hold on. There was also Larry the Cable
Guy. Oh, Larry the Cable Guy for a little while, too. Right.
Who the hell is doing the work down there? That's what I'd like to know. And today, Tree Time is in there.
So I'm hoping...
They will.
They can either play Christmas music, which gets you in the mood when you're decorating for Christmas, or it would be nice, since they're in the WGN Showcase Studio, to play us.
Weren't we supposed to start with all the Christmas music already?
They did over at what used to be The Light. It's called something else now. But
no, here I thought we were going to do
it. When do we make that flip? Yeah.
Oh, any day now.
And then we break for news and traffic.
Christmas news
and
Christmas traffic.
And then we say ho, ho, ho.
Right.
And then we go back to the Christmas music.
Yeah, we're going to start doing that soon.
I know what you mean. The thing is, we're out of our routine.
That's
and
what it is.
Honestly, it's kind of good in a way because you get complacent sometimes when you do the same thing every day. But it's also comfortable.
That's what it is.
Change is scary, Bill. Trust me on that one.
But back to downstairs, were you expecting them to be playing Wham?
No. Do you mean yesterday?
Yes.
I thought they would be playing whatever was on WGN at the time. Like, before the show, you'd think it would be Steve. During the show, it would be us. And then after the show, Ro. And it's up to them. But, like, every time I passed by, I kept hearing, you might be a redneck if... And then dot, 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 dot.
That's still funny?
Yeah, I guess so. He seemed to have a smile. They were enjoying it downstairs.
I bet there were butt cracks showing while they were bending down working.
I didn't want to notice that.
The moon's out early tonight, and it's a super moon.
But there wouldn't have been if they were listening to WGN. Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Because we're constantly reminding the listener, Ryan, pull up your pants.
I got to tell you something, and I know that that's a style that's going around, but when I see people...
Have you walked through a high school? It's like, since your boys have been in high school, have you walked through, like, during the school day?
No, they don't let me in.
You can't believe the amount of kids that are playing by that style. Like, in our school, seriously, I know the times have changed, but if you were to do that, they would sit you down, they'd call your parents in, and they'd try to figure out if you should be expelled. They would just go, well, we can't have this in our school. It makes everybody look bad.
But I know it's stylish, and I know people suffer for the style trends, but if I may, as I drive in, I see people walking, and they have their pants. I mean, they are so far down that it cannot be comfortable, because when your pants are down like that, you pull them up. How can that be? And it's like half the boxers are shown. Like, why even have pants on?
Why even have pants on? And Wendy, the belt industry has taken the biggest hit. You know all my money's in belt futures.
Thank God for the belt.
Where would we be without the belt?
All right, I have a great entrepreneurial idea.
Yes. This is Shark Tank. Go ahead, present
it. Oh my God, this is so good.
Present it to me in Shark Tank lingo.
All right. Why don't they make pants with Velcro on it so it will stick to your underpants?
Yeah.
And then it can just stay there. Because you here's the thing, as I'm driving
in, it loses something in the cool factor.
No, but you wouldn't see it.
Oh, it would just be there?
Yeah.
All right.
And then you could put a decorative belt on if you want,
sure.
Not a functional one.
Sure.
But it's so
something
funny.
Something with Hello Kitty on it.
Well, now you're ruining my idea. I would have failed at Shark Tank. But it's so weird because these pants are so far down, and then I see people pull them up.
Yeah.
But they're pulling them up like a half inch. Don't even bother.
Do either of your boys subscribe to that fashion theory?
No, God, no.
They never do. Okay. Because what would you do, like, if one day one of them was leaving for school and that's how his pants were, how would you handle it?
I would just be glad they found their own clothes and they were clean and they got out the door. Michael's a senior. He wore a suit to school today. And it's funny, you mentioned Shark Tank in his intro to business class.
Yeah.
They had to come up with an idea and they are pitching it to a panel like a la Shark Tank.
That's a great assignment.
Isn't
I don't know
it?
Who came up with that, but that's like a doorway to the future for their kid that wants to do that sort of thing. Good.
It's not that great of an idea, though, I got
to
tell you.
You didn't need to tell us that part. I was very excited for him for a minute there.
Yeah, he was
What's
in a group of students, I think three of them, and it's, I don't know what it's called, so forgive me, I am not pitching it well,
yeah.
But it is like a garbage, you know when you fill your garbage can up and it's filled to the top, but you need to tamp it down a little bit,
yeah.
So you can get more garbage in it.
Yeah.
It's an actual thing. That so you don't have to touch the garbage with your hand. It's like kind of a contraption with a handle on it, and it tamps the garbage down.
Oh, I know
down.
What you're talking. Oh, well, yeah. Don't they have that already?
I don't think so.
No?
I think it's called a hand.
Just a hand. All right.
So you don't have to touch the garbage, like if there's coffee grounds or
right.
whatever. This is a thing, and depending on which way you put it, it would fit various garbage cans. It was interesting. I don't think anybody's going to buy it.
All right. So who decides whether or not it's a success? The teacher does?
They have a panel of I don't even know who is on the Shark Tank panel.
Yeah.
I think local business people. It's not really the Shark Tank people.
Yeah.
But it's a great idea the kids to have to pitch something. It was not Michael's idea, but he was in a group of three. And I don't know what they did because he's been doing all the work, which is weird. Usually my kid is the one that doesn't do all the work.
Wow.
So he wore a suit today because he thought, you know, I'm not that crazy about this product,
right.
But I want to sell it really well. So he took his suit to the dry cleaners, got it cleaned.
That's impressive.
I had to tie his tie for him this morning.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's very impressive.
That I know how to tie a tie?
Every part of it. Every part of it.
But I think it's funny that he wore a suit to pitch it.
Yeah. We always had, there was, I think every school has one kid that almost always wears a suit. Did you have that in your school? There was a kid
yeah.
out of school that almost always
and had
wore
a briefcase.
Yeah.
He's a little businessman
I
in
think,
the making.
Yeah, I know. That's a good thing. All right. Let's take a break. We've got a full show for you. Danny Thomas will be by later on at 11:35. I can't wait to meet Danny Thomas. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. If I came in tomorrow wearing a suit, what would you think?
Well, you know what I'd think.
Somebody has passed away.
Yes. Yep. Or you had a job interview.
Oh,
don't
yeah,
do that.
It's
fun
me,
working with you.
I always give a couple of days notice if I'm even thinking about wearing a suit. I just don't. I'm one of those guys that if I do show up in a suit, everybody just assumes the worst, including myself. I look in a mirror and I'll go, I'm wearing a suit. When I do wear a suit, it's almost akin to the feeling I have today of being in a different studio. I feel so out of sorts and uncomfortable because I don't feel like I can be me when I'm wearing one. Does that make sense?
Yes, but you look damn good.
Ah, you're kind.
I like to dress up. Like when we went to Kevin's wedding, you looked
yeah.
fantastic in your suit.
Thanks.
I wore a lovely dress.
Yes.
I like dressing up because when you feel good, when you look good.
It's better to look good than to feel good.
But I am so current with all my references today. You started it with the Danny Thomas,
yeah.
though. You win.
11:35.
I when I'm dressed up, I have a better day that day because I feel more confident and secure. Raise your hand if you're sure.
Isn't that interesting? Because
I really
do. On the days that I'm just wearing shorts and a sweatshirt,
which is almost every day,
that's when I feel like I'm me and I know my parameters. I know, like, if I can juke to the left or go to the right, I get that. But when I'm wearing a suit, I feel so stiff. And I know there's guys that have to wear one every day for work, so I guess you get used to it at some point.
Well, they're not that uncomfortable.
No, they're not uncomfortable. I just feel like, really, when I wear them,
like a kid
it's
playing
weddings
dress up.
And funerals. I guess kind of like, but I feel like instead of being able to goof around because I'm wearing a jacket and a tie, it's like, hey, no messing around. You're wearing
you
a jacket and a tie. What's wrong with you? Yeah, yeah.
Be thankful we don't have to dress up
in
radio.
I know.
Like today, I'm just in a hoodie and my Blackhawks jacket, and I don't feel confident today. I feel comfortable.
Yeah, but not confident.
No. I should dress up more.
All right, starting tomorrow.
No, I'm not doing it. Hi, Charisse. How are you doing today?
I am great, thank you.
Do you like to dress up? Do you feel out of sorts when you dress up?
Do I feel out of sorts when I dress up? No. I mean, my whole life was in scrubs as an operating room nurse, but when I came out, I like to put on, like, real people's clothes. The reason I called is because I love your topic. I've been fighting it for years, and I'm glad you're bringing it up.
The droopy pants?
Yep. Every time I'm on a bus, in a gas station, in a store, on the street, I very quietly walk up to the person and say, would you mind pulling up your pants while we're, like, enclosed in this area, like on a bus or something? And they look at me and I go, really? Just, you know, to show a little respect. I appreciate it.
What's the success rate on that? How often does it work, Charisse?
I've only had it work twice, and I've been doing it for 3 years.
Oh.
And I have people that look at me and say, why are you getting in my face? Or
right. That was my question. Like, you know, are you the pants patrol?
Yeah, that's exactly how they say it. And I looked at him and I said, you know what? I just look at it this way. We're both living in this world, and if I don't appreciate something you're doing, I'm going to tell you. And if you don't appreciate something I'm doing, you tell me. So they'd go, we don't appreciate you telling us to pull up our pants. I said, well, that's fine, but we got to work it out here because we really don't need to see your underwear. That's just not acceptable to me in my eyes. I'm an old person.
But you have to be mindful of society around you and what they're accepting and not accepting of. I get that.
Yes, and that's what I say to them.
I'm just worried somebody's going to not take kindly to your suggestion and there could be trouble. That's what my concern is.
And I appreciate that. My children are the same, but I've only had it happen a couple times. And when it did happen, what's so funny is the people they were with or people around me would come and stand next to me and say, you know, I kind of agree with her.
Wow.
And then once you're in numbers, it's okay. But see what I'm saying? From what I know, being an old nurse and working with people that have been incarcerated, this is something that used to be done in the prisons, and I presume it's still being done in the prisons and jails now.
That is where it started, correct?
Right. Yes, that's where I have been told. I haven't done a lot of research because my goal is this. This is our world, and all of us have to live in it. And I'm not telling them I don't like their clothes. I'm telling them I don't want to see their underwear. I don't like when they drop the F-bomb. I said, sorry.
Can I ask you a question? What if there's a woman on the bus with you who's showing a little cleavage? Do you tell her to button up?
No, I just say to her, geez, that's a little bit, you know, but I guess that's what you wish to do. But I don't, you know what I mean? I understand the little cleavage thing because we're not back in the 20s anymore.
Right.
And I understand we're not.
If you got it, flaunt it.
Right.
Right. But they're not flaunting something like their, you know, their great abs or something like that. They're flaunting the fact that they can show their underwear. Or I had a gentleman just last week that had it all the way down to his knees. So you could see everything.
Wow.
And
I don't understand that. Why wear pants?
All the way down. So, I don't know how he was walking. And so then he went out and came back into the gas station. I turned around and looked at him. I said, you still haven't pulled those pants up yet?
I would say, dude, you're going to trip yourself on those.
I said, do you understand the harm that you could do if you fell forward?
Yeah.
You can't even stop yourself. I mean, you know, you guys, you can tell my passion only because we're all living in here this together.
Absolutely.
And the reason the world is not doing 100% great, I can't tell him you don't respect yourself because that's his thing. But I can tell him that he's not respecting me or the others around him. The same if I saw a woman flaunting herself all over the place and there were children around. Or
Wendy.
You
know,
there's a time
I know. Don't look at me.
Wendy.
Wendy, buddy.
Come on.
I love you.
Pull your pants up.
Bill.
Oh, thank you, Charisse.
Keep going, guys.
You're
thank you, Charisse.
Thank you
we'll
so
talk
much.
To you.
So Charisse's message to you, America, pull your pants up. She does not want to see your underwear.
I mind my own business.
I like the passion. That's excellent. All right, we'll take a quick break. There's news. Ryan will give you the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Did they say in the news before that the Pope is flying a W flag? Did I hear Steve Grzanich say that on the news earlier?
He's not flying a W flag, but you know, Blaise Cupich is out there right now.
Oh, okay.
He will be cardinal in festivities and events and ceremonies that'll take place this weekend. So he visited the Pope, brought him a Cubs hat, brought him a baseball, and sent out a tweet saying that you know, he provided these gifts. And I don't have the exact tweet in front of me right now, but essentially closed it out with hashtag flag.
Is it a conflict of interest to be a cardinal?
Oh,
but also be a Cubs fan.
Did.
I wonder if that's going to fly.
I just think they should have W vestments. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Like, you know, put the vestments on and there's a big W on the back of it.
Do you think the Pope watched any of the World Series? I'm sure he did.
I bet he did.
Do you think he did?
Sure.
Those games are super early in Vatican City,
right?
Very early.
Wake up in the morning, you're brushing your teeth, those games would be on.
Who doesn't like baseball?
Rain delay, 10th inning. I'm sure he was watching it.
He caused the rain delay.
I was just going to say, there's so much interplay between religion and especially the World Series. We kept watching people praying both ways. And then, yeah, the rain did come at a very opportune time for us. It kind of changed the momentum.
You think church membership went up and attendance went up?
I bet it did.
I guarantee you there was more praying going on that week.
Which, if I'm God, which thank goodness I'm not, I just poo-poo all these little requests that are coming in.
Would you?
Yeah, there are people starving. There are terrible things happening in this country.
So the
There's
priority
a violence.
List,
and you want the Cubs to win?
Right. If you're God, you go, okay, on the priority list. There are bigger, more pressing matters, although it was 108 years, so even God would go at some point, all right, enough of this. I got to fix this.
Does now, God roll his eyes, do you think, on some of these? And does he get these prayers? Do they come in like a text, like we get a text?
Yes.
The Pope does appear to be looking at the baseball he's been given, and it does look like it's got some writing, so there may be some autographs on that ball that was given to him by Blaise Cupich.
They gave him a ball. Was it autographed by any of them?
It looks like it. Yeah. It looks like there's writing on there.
Did he give him the big-time bat, the special edition bat?
Unless the Archbishop signed it himself. I don't know if that would work. I don't see a baseball bat,
Wouldn't it be cool for the Pope? He's looking at the ball, and he goes, Javi Baez, You just look at the ball. I like Javi Baez.
Oh, you didn't get Rizzo, did you?
Right.
Can you come back when you get Rizzo, and then we'll talk about this Cardinal deal?
If anyone gets struck by lightning, please, I'm not with either of them.
Some of the Cubs had very biblical-style beards. Like Arrieta had a very biblical-style beard, so I bet the Pope would enjoy that.
Very Abe Lincoln. It really is. I can't get past that. And he shaved it immediately.
It's gone now. Yeah.
He looks like a completely different person.
Yeah. So it was an intimidation beard is what it was.
See, I'm telling you, that doesn't intimidate.
That beard, that big bushy beard.
It looks...
Remember earlier when you made fun of me for not being able to find a hole to put the headphones
off
in?
Those are two buttons. It doesn't... See, to me, that's not intimidating. It looks like a grandfatherly soul that's going to sit you on his knee. If you want intimidating, go goatee or a little soul patch or something like that. Or crazy eyes and hair sticking out. But that, to me, did not look... menacing.
There was a time early in the playoffs when Arrieta was pitching to Hunter Pence of the Giants, and I turned the game on and I went, oh, look, Amish guys are playing baseball.
It has an Amish look to it.
It looked like baseball from a long time ago.
Looks calm and lovely people and not menacing or intimidating.
Right. The only thing that made me realize it wasn't because it was a night game and there were lights on and the Amish guys would not play under those conditions. That's the only thing.
Does the 95-mile-an-hour fastball in the corner, is that intimidating to you?
That's kind of intimidating.
Yeah, but let the batter be afraid of that, not your beard.
Well, Kyle Hendricks does not look like an intimidating guy, but he may win the Cy Young Award, right? He looks like
a guy
who just came out of college classroom after giving a dissertation.
Oh, without a doubt. But take it one step further. You know how when the Hawks get to the playoffs, and it's not just the Hawks, it's all hockey teams, they grow what they call the playoff beard. It's a standard thing. So isn't that strictly intimidation or what
no,
is
I
that?
I think it's luck. I think it's just
for love?
They're just doing it because we're not going to shave. We're going to focus on the game only and not shaving.
No element of this makes us look more menacing.
I don't think
it's all just a luck thing. All right.
And, you know, if you're going to go menacing, go Schwarber.
Yeah.
That's like, I'm a crazy guy.
Right.
That's what you want to do.
Like a soul patch with a mind of its own.
A wily soul patch.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that's called because it's not a goatee. It's just like a chin warmer.
It's a chin warmer. That's what it is. Yeah.
Well, that looks more menacing than a full-on Abe Lincoln beard.
And he had that way back in high school. You've seen that videotape of him singing and dancing with his high school, right?
No.
Have you not seen that? You need to see that. It's Kyle Schwarber when he was a senior in high school, and there was some sort of talent show at his school, and he's up there. He's wearing a very brightly colored jacket and shirt and tie combination, and he's just kind of swaying and singing to the music. It's like up with, like Kyle Schwarber was an Up With People. It would be that. It doesn't make sense. And then the other guys on the Cubs did a parody of it where they wore similar outfits, and then
really?
They're singing and dancing to that same song. It's really funny.
Yeah, I didn't really follow a lot of Cubs stuff until the World Series, and I'm probably not going to again, but during the World Series, definitely into all of it. Yeah. So I'll look up the Schwarber stuff. He still had that chin warmer?
Yeah, yeah.
In high school?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I'm looking at a picture on the internet now of the Pope wearing a Grandpa Ross jersey. That's cool.
I don't know. See, I've known you too long. I know not to believe you, and yet I still believe you.
No, it's not. It doesn't exist. All right, we'll take a quick break. It is Tech Tuesday. We'll find out what Bridget Carey has for us in the world of technology next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Wait, so it's Turkey Tuesday and it's Tech Tuesday on the same day?
Yeah, can you believe that?
It doesn't happen often.
And maybe I'll make tacos tonight, and then it could be Taco Tuesday as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Bridget Carey on the line, CNET senior editor and host of the CNET Update. Bridget, earlier this week, the Nintendo NES Classic went on sale and was sold out in a minute at all locations. And I was very frustrated. People were buying it and then turning around. Bill, what did you see? $10,000 on eBay?
Yeah, on eBay, $10,000.
Oh, that's a nice dream, isn't it? No one's going to do that.
No, I don't think so
either. And they're going to just release more.
But they were selling in the high 200s. That was the price range last week. So somebody who went and bought it could quadruple their money in no time at all.
If somebody buys it.
Yeah. They were selling it at that price.
Really?
Yeah.
When you're desperate and you wait to the last minute, you know, there will be people who probably pay like four times as much, I'm sure. You know, but it's just a matter of, it's just, Nintendo didn't make a lot. And it's going to be the hot item this holiday.
I don't believe they didn't make a lot, Bridget. They're saying they didn't make a lot because they have a new Nintendo system actually coming out later on. I just believe that they're releasing it in small doses to make the demand greater. How could they not make a lot of them?
Oh, well, that's true, too. You know, get that hype up by making it one of those things that it's hard to get.
Bill tried to offer me his Cabbage Patch doll in its place.
When those Pokemon Go bracelets came out to help you play that mobile game with a physical bracelet, they were also impossible to get. So they were also going on eBay for obscene amounts of money. So I think people are just I know here at the office, though, everyone was really giddy about it. It's one of those things that nostalgia is a powerful thing.
But these were all games that, I mean, really, if you collected video games, you had all these games already. There's nothing new. It's just all retro-style games,
and all
right?
In one place.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I've seen similar type things before, like with Genesis, like if you really liked
Sega.
Yep.
Yeah, like I was, that was my jam. But but the fact that, like, Nintendo made the old system again, you know, people are just, you know, dying to have it because, you know, you're worried that maybe your original system might not be so, it might not be on the fritz, you know, after all these years. So people would definitely, you know, hold on to that.
And speaking of Nintendo, they have their first smartphone game coming out.
Yeah, this is a big deal because Nintendo has always avoided putting Mario and all those other franchises on as apps because they always want you to buy their system, their Nintendo DS. But for the first time, there's going to be an app for the iPhone coming out in December. They just announced it's going to be December 15th, and it's going to cost $10, and it's called Super Mario Run. So this looks like that old classic Mario game, but the difference is that Mario is just going to keep moving in that two-dimensional world. and you're going to use your thumb to tap. Like, he's going to continuously move, and you got to just kind of keep him jumping and avoiding obstacles. That way you can kind of, you can imagine playing this with one hand in that way, right? Because you're not trying to steer him. He's going on his own, but you're just hopping over things. So people are wondering, well, is this going to be as good? Because it won't be exactly like your old games. But it could be addictive, and for $10, is this going to have enough to make it worth it to be $10? Are you going to feel like you're going to get $10 worth of gameplay, but people might just download it because, once again, nostalgia is a powerful thing, and they'll just take a chance on it and download it for fun for the holidays.
Why doesn't Mario's brother Luigi get any of the press, Bridget? It's very disturbing. It's like Alec Baldwin and his brothers. Everyone knows Alec, but they can't name the other ones. What's going on there?
He can't catch a break. It's tough.
All right.
I really love these old Nintendo games, and I liked Sega Genesis as well. You have these Grand Theft Auto and all these virtual reality. I like the old school stuff so much better. I really do.
I think there is a lot of value in the quickness of just jumping into a game, keeping it simple. I mean, on one hand, the big consoles for the home now have these movie-esque experiences where the entertainment lasts weeks and they're really involved, and it is like playing a movie. But here, there is a lot of fun in just jumping into something really quick, especially when you're, you know, waiting for the bus kind of thing. You know, you just want to jump in and jump out, and they're addictive. It's why we play the Candy Crush. It's why we play simple things like that. And why not bring that old, you know, 2D type of game to a phone?
Sometimes you'll see an ad on TV, and when the ad's over, you go, I don't know if that was a movie or a video game. I have no idea which that was.
It's
yeah, exactly.
Too real.
Yeah.
My son Dylan's playing the NHL 2017, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And honest to God, when I walk in there when he's playing it, I think the Hawks are playing because
yeah.
it's more looks real like, than
yeah.
watching a real game.
Uh-huh.
I don't like that. I like my little mushrooms
all
and things.
People.
I do. All right. And I was reading all over the place. We were talking about this prior to the election. People could just put news stories, a link to news stories on Facebook, and they didn't have to be true. A lot of times they were fake news stories and news sites. And what is Facebook saying about that? They can curb this. Why don't they?
Well, it sure is nice to make a lot of money off all those clicks, right?
I guess.
It also is hard to be the voice to say what's fake, what's highly opinionated, and, you know, kind of being that voice of we're not going to allow anything or not. It's going to take a lot of computation, right? Now, Google has an algorithm that tries to weed that out. But yesterday, if you searched for election results, the top result was a fake news story. So not even Google can really be great at weeding it out all the time. There's a lot of criticism over what role did Facebook play in an election when it's so easy to just fire off, you know, a share to something that feels really passionate and fiery and the headline is crazy and maybe you didn't read it through, or maybe not everyone has a trained eye, I would say.
I don't. I think most people don't.
Yeah, I think as a journalist, I'll be skeptical because I went through schooling to think about that stuff. But when you're just quickly scrolling and you see something hot, like Pope endorses Trump, and you're like, you know, whatever. That was one of the fake stories that actually took off and had over like a million shares. People aren't thinking enough and going, is this right? Let me go check on Google. Not everyone's doing that. They're not triple checking things. So people are sharing hot and people are going, you know what? Does Facebook have a responsibility to kind of warn people that this isn't right? One suggestion going on right now is, well, maybe there should be a flag. So if I flag it as fake and you flag it as fake and 50 other people flag it as fake, then that friend who's going to share it might get a warning going, hey, people say this is fake. Are you sure you still want to share? That said, this is really about, do you have the freedom to post what you want? And will people run away from Facebook? I'm sure Facebook's worried about that. Zuckerberg, he says, you know, fake news only made up 1% of all Facebook content. Well, I like to know, out of all the news content, what was that percentage? Because, you know, let's narrow it down to just talk about articles. Out of all articles, how much of it is fake? He's not talking about that. And even when they highlight stories that are trending, they've been highlighting fake news stories.
Oh, no.
So there is a lot of criticism now. I'm curious to see what Facebook's going to do to kind of tweak algorithms and still walk that fine line of, not wanting to completely ban a URL, you know, but at the same time, maybe behind the scenes, they might give less prominence to that. So if someone does share it, maybe it doesn't take off as fast. I don't know.
The problem, though, with somebody faking a story, flagging a story as fake, is a lot of people, if they just didn't agree with a story, they would flag it as fake, even if it wasn't.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see a lot of good suggestions on what to do, because a lot of people say, well, you should be like Google. You should just be able to weed it out so that way it's not on the top of search results. But these sites are designed to make money off clicks, and so they're going to have wild, sexy headlines. And I can just say that for right now, for the time being, it's all of our responsibility to think before we share, to actually go, wait, does this look real? Is this legit? Take a second but before being all passionate about it being whatever thought you have and on your side, because sometimes, you know, don't we all fall to that temptation that, like, yeah, this is exactly what I was thinking, let me share that. But to actually go on Google, search for it. Is another outlet writing about it? Has it been debunked by another site yet? You know, kind of be skeptical, because it's so easy to be fooled now.
I have gone back to the important things for using Facebook, like what kind of vacuum do you recommend? Mm-hmm. And people are answering me, and I've also gone back to posting pictures of food I'm making. So that's what I'm using Facebook for. It's good again. Making Facebook great again. That's what I'm doing.
That's your platform. You'll win.
All right. Well, Bridget, what do you have coming up on the CNET update for today?
We're talking more about Nintendo and something I can't quite say yet, but keep tuned in. It has to do with saving holiday photos in new ways.
Ah.
Very secretive,
we'll go to
Bridget.
CNET.com.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much. It's Bridget Carey from CNET.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Bill, I asked you if it was the first Tuesday of the month, and you said it was, but it isn't.
I was placating you. I decided to placate you.
Don't placate
it's
me.
It's not the. It's
I'd
obvious,
like someone else to placate
it's
me.
It's obviously not the first Tuesday of the month, but I didn't want you to look bad, so I fell on the grenade.
That is not what you did. But thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for
he
falling.
He just likes saying placate.
Placate. The
well, Mike McNamara is here from the Midwest Independent Film Festival, and you are always here like clockwork.
Clockwork.
The first Tuesday of every month, but there was a busy Tuesday.
We had not one busy Tuesday, but two, and I've always been adamant that no matter what, we never move the first Tuesdays.
The show must go on.
The show must go, right. I'm an actor.
You're a showman.
I'm a theater guy. The show must go on no matter what, first Tuesday. And then this Cubs team started playing pretty well.
Yes.
And, new club. And I got an email a few weeks out saying, so what are you going to do if Game 6 of the World Series has, you know, if the Cubs are in the World
and
Series,
that was
Game 6
Rizzo.
Is that night?
He sent the note. Very curious.
Right.
Because we won't play. Anthony Rizzo said we won't play. And we don't want
to
get in the way.
Right, right. And I was like, go ahead and play the game.
Right.
At that point, I think they were down 2-1 to the Giants. So I was like, easy. You know, we'll cross that bridge. Then we come to it. And then... clearly,
we once, came to it.
So we said, you know, once every 108 years, we'll move the fest. And then, of course, the next week was the election.
There was an election?
There
oh,
was.
Yeah, Wendy, yeah.
I heard.
In the
paper. Voted.
In the
I
paper.
Heard Tammy Duckworth won. Is
oh,
what
she did
I heard.
Win. All
yeah,
right,
so that was the big one. We didn't want to get in Tammy's way. So we moved it 1 week to tonight, the 15th. And it's a huge night. It's our 8th annual. This is our advertising community shorts night. And you think, well, what's that all about? Well, as we tried to keep expanding the independent film community here in Chicago in the Midwest, we kept looking around and see, well, how can we keep expanding this? Then we said, well, hang on. We have one of the most vibrant, successful, amazing advertising communities in the country.
Easily.
Here in Chicago and in the whole Midwest.
Right.
So we said, well, what if we dedicated a night to all those side projects, those short films, those music videos, those quick little super, you know, web series that commercial creatives work on when they're not working on commercials.
Right.
Love
so
it.
It's become this awesome, really high level, exciting, funny, dramatic, everything shorts program. And we get together some of the best creatives from Leo Burnett, BBDO, DDB to make the decisions on which films make it in. And tonight is our 8th annual. We're very nearly sold out. And I brought a couple of the filmmakers with me tonight that'll be premiering their films. I've got Brad Bischoff right here. And I've got Lisa Masur.
Hi, guys. How are you? Thanks
Hi.
For coming up.
Hey, how's it going?
So your regular jobs when you're not making short films are what exactly?
directing and editing commercials. I'm a staff at McGarry Bow in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the executive producer at Wanted Optimus, a production company here in Chicago.
Excellent. Right around the corner.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
Wow. So aren't you busy enough doing your creativity during the day that you don't have time to make little things on the side?
Somewhat, yes. Luckily, I'm not an actual maker. I just push everyone else to make
all
things.
Right. Yeah.
But creativity outside of work is always good, and so
it
I've
is.
Always pushed our directors to kind of do fun projects that they their heart is in outside of advertising.
In a lot of ways, a TV commercial has most of the elements of a very short film. I mean, there, it's still a narrative. It's still storytelling. All the, everything that you'd be putting into a film is being put into a TV commercial.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And it's kind of like, you know, storytelling, you know, in general is just, I mean, I can't turn it off. And so if there's a way to, I mean, do that as a living in the commercial industry, I was kind of hesitant at first, but then once I sort of got in the doors there, I mean, I've just had such an incredible time, and it's just the people you meet and who are willing to help you on these projects, because, you know, I think that if there's one person like me there who wants to make a film after hours, I know there's at least two or three others who are willing to help you out, so it kind of makes it a little more easier.
That's pretty great, actually, because you'd think it'd be super competitive, and no, I'm not going to help you, but no.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no,
it's,
a lot of people, because it's kind of like, okay, let's, you know, let's do the best job we can on this project. But then afterwards, it's kind of like there's a creative fulfillment inside that is, you know, sort of uneasy. Like there's more that you want to do that's maybe not for a client, you know, it's not like a specific brand in mind. So it's kind of like everybody wants to keep fulfilling that desire.
Some people in the advertising industry have gone on, have used it as kind of a stepping stone to get into television and films, right? That happens from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like Spike Jonze and you know, some of my favorite filmmakers started out doing commercials and music videos, transitioned to feature films almost like later on. You know, so I kind of like Michel Gondry's another one. I just look up to these guys a lot.
Settlemeyer too, right?
Yeah.
He's done all right for himself. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it easier to make films now just with the iPhone and everything? I know people have made productions from using their small camera on an iPhone. It's easier, isn't it? To make, to put a good story
exactly
out there.
What I was going to say is like the technology has made, there's almost no excuse now not to make a film. I think the real issue though is finding a quality story to tell. You know, like it's such an oversaturated market, and the other half of the battle is getting your film seen. And I think there's so many people who are focused on like, oh my God, let's just go make something. And, you know, you maybe aren't putting the right amount of time into writing a script and, you know, making sure that what you're doing is worth it. And, you know, you don't want to just keep it. I always relate it to like putting out mixtapes as opposed to like, you know, sitting down, which there's, you know, there's something to that. But, you know, it's kind of like when you want to sit down and put out an album, it's kind of like, you know.
So, Brad, if there was a girl you liked and wanted to impress her, you'd make her a little film, wouldn't
you? Oh, yeah.
Good move.
A Billy Ocean mixtape.
Now we're talking. All right, we'll come back and discuss this further. It's the Midwest Independent Film Festival. It's going on tonight, not 2 weeks ago, not 1 week ago, but tonight. The best way, Mike, for them to get tickets is what?
We got a few left. Just go to midwestfilm.org, and you'll actually see the full lineup. We're showing 18 short films tonight. A lot of them are world premieres. Your first chance to see them anywhere, and just go to midwestfilm.org.
Excellent. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN, along with Mike McNamara of the Midwest Independent Film Fest, which is tonight. It's usually the first Tuesday of every month, not this time around. There were other pressing matters, so it's tonight instead. Two of the filmmakers featured tonight, Lisa Masur is here and Brad Bischoff is here. Brad has a film called Lady of the House. Lisa has a film called Optimus. Would it be fair to say these films are slightly different in tone? That's fair, right?
That is fair. And also, Lisa's production company is called Optimus.
Oh, it is.
The
I'm sorry.
The name of the film is no other way to say it.
Oh, sorry,
I think I screwed that up.
Close enough.
But it's a hilarious comedy that, amazingly enough, takes place in a voiceover booth, very similar to our delightful setting right here.
Well, Wendy and I watched a bit of it this morning, and it's as accurate could be. I know not everybody has had the experience of doing a voiceover, but for those of us who've had, you nailed the experience. Start
try
to
sound more excited when you are talking to them right now. Will you do that?
I'll try one more time. Ready? For somebody who's done it, boy, is it an experience. How's that?
That is
better?
So how it is.
I lay low, a little smaller. But really, the criticism that one would get while in the booth over just, sometimes you'll just have a voiceover that is just one word where you just go, wow, and then people will be critiquing that and go,
oh, yeah.
Sound younger, sound older, sound fatter, sound thinner.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would like to believe that it's exaggeration, but it's not.
It's not.
It is exactly true. And I think for people who are in the industry, they view it one way and realize that it is true to life. Other people think it is more of an exaggeration, but sadly, those
either
of
way,
us
it's
the
funny.
Outside, no.
So, what happened that you said I need to take this experience that I'm used to and make it into a film? What happened?
So, to be fair, I'm the executive, one of the executive producers on the project. The director Tim Mason is who came up with the idea. He is a writer on the creative side in advertising and creative director, and as well as a director. And so, he had this idea. He has a group that he works with called the Hog Butchers, who are improvisers. And this was really born out of them kind of wanting to do something on the side. And Tim had the genuine idea. And I think his improvisers had essentially worked on something like this previously on stage.
Yeah.
So they kind of came in. We have a studio over at One, and we said, all right, come on over. We'll get some cameras and let's do it. And honestly, it came out so much better than I could have ever even imagined.
It's very funny.
No Other Way to Say It is the name of it.
Exactly. Yes. And this is the kind of film that Advertising Community Shorts Night at the Midwest Independent Film Festival is all about. You have people that are working on commercials 70 hours a week. And like Lisa said, they said, well, we got a studio. All right. Well, I've kind of got a script. Well, we've got some really good improvisers. All right. Well, just come over. Let's take a weekend and let's shoot it and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so we're thrilled to have the festival premiere for that one tonight.
And Brad, then, yours, Lady of the House. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah. So the film stars my sister-in-law, Karina, who's an opera singer, and she became a stay-at-home mother maybe like 6 years ago now. So she has two kids and kind of put this part of her life to the side. And I was inspired to make it because I recently became a father 2 years ago.
Changes everything, doesn't it?
It changes everything. And just to see, you know, this, you know, because filmmaking is my passion. You know, I ultimately want to make feature films. And it's just like to be able to deal with being a father and more importantly, watching my partner become a mother because she has all these hopes and dreams and life desires. But like, it all gets put to the side momentarily to take care of and love this child. And I wanted to explore that, the traditional dynamics of motherhood. And I don't know, you know, it's like that was the, and I went on vacation out west where she lives and convinced my partner Midea to spend a day. It was all shot in one day, very docu-style, just following her in her life, and that's her life. And we sort of added this sort of like last narrative shot where it's just her, you know, I don't want to give it away.
Yeah,
whoever's listening, but
the final moment
very
is
cinematic
incredible.
Ending. Yeah, it's the only shot that we lit. Everything else is,
really?
Is natural light. Everything else is real, you know, raw locations just going out and just following her in her day.
Fred, when you first thought of this idea, was it the initial intent to do it all in one day or did it occur to you later on?
It was. We shot it all in one day, all on one lens, and we just wanted it to feel... it's funny when you bring up like iPhones and shooting on iPhones, you know, it was like I even considered that just to... Because it does something aesthetically when you're watching it. It feels kind of like a modern home movie. But ultimately, I did want more of a cinematic feel to it. So we had, you know, a really nice camera rental and... But we just picked one lens, so there would be no lens swapping on the day.
Yeah.
And just we'd just be there with her the whole time. Yeah.
What does it do to both of you? You're used to seeing your work on a standard television size screen, and now tonight you're seeing it on a wide screen. How does that change the whole game for you guys?
Well, it's nice because we normally don't get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Number one. So I think it brings a lot more people out, and there's a shared experience as opposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Commercials and a lot of the branded content stuff that we put out that is only on the internet or on TV, mm-hmm. sitting in a theater with other people and hearing how they react and feeling that feeling in the theater, there's nothing like it.
I always relate it to sports. Like, I feel like tonight's like we're going to the stadium, you know? Like,
yeah.
We have a real game, you know? And like, it's like exhibition
game time.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's the game time. Yeah.
And it will be packed tonight. We'll have 300 people there, jam packed. And it is a reminder to everybody to keep going to theaters. Netflix,
sure.
YouTube. We all want to watch it on the little phones and on our TVs. There's something to be said for that packed house,
mm-hmm.
300 people, especially with these two films tonight.
Yeah.
Very funny, very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something when that communal experience and all that energy kind of wells up. And that's what's going down tonight at Landmark Century Center Cinema.
Awesome. I was just telling you off the air, I don't get to see movies very much. I just really don't go to movies. But these are the types of things that, I don't know, they're more emotional, they have more meaning, and they're more personal than a big blockbuster hit. So I'm all for this. And one day I'll make it out there, Mike.
2017. It's on tape, Mike. That is my mission for 2017. I'm on the record. It's on tape.
It'll happen.
Good luck to
It'll
you guys.
Happen.
Thank you so
much. One more time. For tickets, Mike, what do they want
to
do?
Just head to midwestfilm.org. We've only got a few left till we're completely sold out. And you can also take a shot if you want to come to the door at 2828 North Clark, Landmark Century Center Cinema. Tonight, Advertising Community Shorts Night. It's going to be awesome.
Lisa, thanks. Brad, thanks. Mike, thanks.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Thank you very much.
A quick break, then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, since I was a boy, I've wanted to meet the one and only Danny Thomas. It's always been my dream to meet Danny Thomas. I enjoy him on TV. He taught me how to do the spit take, and now he's here in studio, Mr. Danny Thomas.
Actually, Bill, I hate to break it to you. It is not the Danny Thomas you were thinking of. It's Daniel Thomas, who is the co-chair of the BMO Harris Bank Magnificent Mile Lights Festival.
Well, I've been hornswoggled.
I've never had quite an introduction like that, Bill. That's
you never sure. will again.
That's going to go down in history for sure.
All right. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. Daniel Thomas, this is the 25th annual BMO Harris Bank Magnificent Mile Lights Festival. And there's something new for the 25th year, Friday and Saturday, too?
It is. And you know what? Before we get started, I got a little gift for you guys.
What?
Can I just throw these over
yes.
here?
Yes.
Because, you know, we have some grand marshals
Look
coming
at this.
To Chicago this weekend. And no one else has got hands like this. So your very own
Mickey Mouse
hands that you can...
I'm not happy that you cut them off me either, Daniel. I'll tell you that. That was a rude move.
It's like you can be like Michael Jackson, Mickey.
I'm going to do that.
Mickey.
That's what
it'd
be.
Oh, yeah, like Michael Jackson.
He's a good Southern,
isn't
he?
Isn't he great?
He is great. Yeah, no, 25th year, really exciting year. And a couple of things that are new. First of all, it's a two-day event. So we're going to start in Lights Festival Lane on Friday evening. So we're expanding beyond the family demographic on Saturday and the lighting of the lights. So you can, for those that are downtown and suburban commuters, you can grab a hotel room downtown on the Magnificent Mile. And we start entertaining at Pioneer Court, Lights Festival Lane from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So we're going to tell some magical stories about the history of the Lights Festival. And we're really going to engage with a lot of our partners. So everyone from Connie's Pizza, Eli's Cheesecake. And something really cool this year that's really new is the BMO Dome. So BMO Harris Bank, our presenting sponsor, are doing a virtual reality lighting. And you can come in and write your own holiday message. And
really?
We're going to be able to show that to everyone throughout the nation. So some really cool things happening this year.
I was talking to Daniel off the air. I hadn't gone to Disney as an adult and mm-hmm. finally went back many, many years later. And when I saw the parade, I forgot how exciting that was. This, to me, the BMO Harris Magnificent Mile Lights Festival, this is very similar to that Disney Lights Parade.
It is, and it's, and I was just saying to you guys off the air that it's not until, you know, I'm one of 600 volunteers that get together with the Magnificent Mile Association and its partners to put this on, not only for the city of Chicago, but the nation. It really is the kickoff to the nation's holiday season. And it's not until you actually get out there and volunteer and you see the look on people's faces, whether, and it's not just kids, it's the adults. And I remember one of my old co-volunteers saying to me, you know, once you do this once, Daniel, you're never going to let go. And, you know, I work alongside members that have been here since day one. And to think what this has become across the nation is just something really incredible and really special. And it's free for everyone. You know, you don't have to pay to come and see this. And everyone can come out, whether you're along the streets of North Michigan Avenue in the Mag Mile or whether you're watching it at home.
Yeah.
And it's not just Chicago. It's not just the state of Illinois.
Right.
It's broadcast in over 90% of the country.
Is it really? I didn't realize that far. Wow.
And how did we get so lucky to get it?
I know, right? It's just one of those things. Once you have that partnership and Disney and Tribune and GN have been great partners from the start, and it just, the magic happens, and it just gets stronger every year. And we're pleased to say we've broken borders this year. We're going into Canada,
yeah,
in terms of syndication, so people in Canada will be able to watch the show at home as well.
Do we have a weather forecast yet for this?
You know, we laugh about this every year, because you know, it's just like an election, right? You can't predict it. the weather is truly in the powers that be. So yeah, at the moment, you know, we're showing potentially a little sprinkling of snow, a little bit of wind. But,
don't you
know,
you want that, though? I want a little bit of snow.
A dusting would be cool.
That's perfect.
Yeah, totally. A dusting is fine. But as long as the wind keeps down, you know, part of the procession and the parade this year is that we've got five wonderful helium balloons, and they're bigger, brighter than ever. And we just want to make sure that we get those down the route.
Yeah, sure.
So that everyone gets to see those as well.
Are you at liberty to disclose who the helium balloons are, or is that a secret?
You know, I'd love to keep that a secret.
Let's keep it a secret.
There's a few specials, but you know, I can give you some other things. I mean, celebrities,
sure,
we've got, Chicago's own MVP, Ben Zobrist.
Oh, nice.
So
oh,
the parade wouldn't be the same without him, right?
Yeah.
We've got something to celebrate. And his lovely wife, Juliana, who is who's a Christian singer.
Yeah,
she'll
she's
be
great.
In the spray. Blue Man Group, we've got them coming along as well. Jody Messina, our friends at Southwest Airlines, are bringing her along. She's a country superstar.
Absolutely.
Tegan Marie, another young country music presented by Radio Disney Country. We've got Forever on Your Mind, Drew Lacey, Kurt Ealing. We've got Lexi Walker, The Remedy. I mean, the lineup is just fantastic. And talking about new things for this year, do you remember Toy Story?
Oh, very much.
And do you remember Woody, Alan, and Jesse?
Yeah.
Well, they're coming along, and they're going to be along the route.
I have goosebumps.
Saturday.
I have goosebumps for that. I love Toy Story.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Good. Wow, it sounds like a great lineup.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. So for you, this is, as you said, this is a labor of love, and there's something about seeing the looks of people's faces during this. It just makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it?
It does, and I think it's not just about Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse lighting the lights. It's about just getting away from it all and actually having a couple of hours together. And again, whether you're watching it along the Magnificent Mile, whether you're coming along for the activation in Pioneer Court, or whether you're watching it at home, you just forget about everything in life and you just have some fun and immerse yourself in the experience. And that's really what it's all about.
Ben Zobrist will be two for two in the parade department very soon. He has had incredible luck in the parade routes lately, so good for him.
And he was just at Disney World in a parade, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
There'll be no time for baseball for him anymore. It'll be strictly a parade schedule for Ben Zobrist.
You know, that's okay, right?
That's fine.
More than 40 floats and fireworks. Will there be fireworks?
There will be fireworks. So at the end of the live broadcast, we'll have fireworks on the Chicago River, and that will be as spectacular, if not even more spectacular, on the 25th anniversary. So lots and lots for people.
This city is already a world-class city, but on a night like this, or two nights like this now, it really shows it off to its fullest potential. So I'm very excited about this. Every year it just outdoes itself.
It does. And, you know, whether it's people coming in from the suburbs, you know, and I don't know if you guys know this, but the Lights Festival, part of its history was really helping the hotel and retail community in a softer time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you sort of rewind to 25 years, it was about great leadership. And Mark Shulman, the founder of Eli's Cheesecake Company, is the founder of Lights Festival. And they got together, again, as volunteers and said, you know, what can we do to help and create, you know, economic development in the city around a traditionally soft time of year? So that's where volunteerism, great business partnerships get together, and look at what we have 25 years later. It's just astounding that we create a moment like this across the nation. And
it's pretty amazing to watch.
It is amazing, and not a lot of people hear the insights of how this started. And it's just a wonderful thing to be able to do that.
And so it all kicks off Friday night, 4 p.m. right outside the Tribune Tower at Pioneer Court. That's 401 North Michigan Avenue. And then Saturday, it will repeat at that same time, 4 p.m.?
So the programming on Saturday starts at 11 a.m.
Okay.
So 11 to 4, Lights Festival Lane will be open. There'll be activities going on there. You can come along and get photos with the Santa Chalet brought to you by the Illinois Office of Tourism. Little twist there. We've got we may have some live penguins. And
oh, I gotta go for the penguins.
Yeah, is there going to be live penguins?
No, I think if you come there about 12:30, I think you might be in luck. So you know we're creating the sort of the North Pole element there, and you can get some really unique experiences. Brookfield Zoo are also bringing some surprise animals as well over and above penguins. So you can do selfies. You can have a slice of Connie's pizza. Mm-hmm. You can decorate Eli's cheesecake. You can watch the entertainment. You know, we've got the Museum of Science and Industry. There's just Southwest Airlines from an aviation perspective are having some fun with all their customers. So there's so much activation right through until 4 o'clock. And then our grand marshals, Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, start rolling from the top of Oak Street at 5:30 and head the way down the route. And they will light over a million lights, 200 trees along the avenue. And we've got a little surprise this year as well. We've one additional element that's new is the block, the Water Tower Place, mm-hmm. right there in that section. Traditionally, that section hasn't been lit. And we're really pleased that we've been able to work with our city and state partners. And we're going to light that block as well this year.
Perfect.
So the entire route. So there's over a million lights this year.
Wendy has volunteered to pick up the tab on the electric bill, which is very, very nice of her.
Perfect.
I didn't see that coming, did
that's
you?
That's awesome. No, I didn't see that coming.
Mickey, you better be nice to Minnie when you're riding in the parade.
Everything's fine.
That is almost scary when I hear it.
You know, one of the behind-the-scenes thing that we have is we have a recording of Mickey and Minnie and what they do in terms of the countdown, and we share that with a few secret people just so that they know what Mickey and Minnie are going to say. He said, you know, Bill, I tell
it's
you what,
good.
I think we'll get him to do it live next year. What do you reckon, Bill?
I'm in. I would love it. That'll be
that
fun.
Would be a travesty. Everybody gathered around and then you bring up Bill Left
I'll
to do
it.
That.
Pay me in penguins. That's all I ask. I want to be paid in penguins.
All right. His name is Daniel Thomas, not the Danny Thomas you expected to
still
come up
good,
today.
Still good, though. It's still exciting.
I think it's better. I like his accent better than the original version. The BMO Harris Bank Magnificent Mile Lights Festival, you are the festival co-chair. It's the 25th annual. All the details can be found at themagnificentmile.com.
Absolutely. And there's over 50 offers if people are looking at staying or having some retail offers along the Magnificent Mile. So check it all out on themagnificentmile.com and be sure to join us for the 25th anniversary.
Daniel, thanks for being here. It sounds like fun.
Thanks.
The whole
for
thing
me.
Does. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. you mysteriously stopped. You know what I've noticed about you?
What?
Is that when we have a guest in the studio who is a man and they have a continental sounding accent, you get all glossy-eyed.
I got smitten. I got to tell you, listening to Daniel Thomas, he's from New Zealand, he said, and I just, together, he says really interesting things.
Right.
And I love the way he says it.
You get a smile, and your eyes get all glassy. And
I get mesmerized.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Either someone speaking in a New Zealand accent or you talking like Mickey.
You have the same effect, right? Same thing happens.
I don't know. Your Mickey haunts me. I love it. But we were given these Mickey Mouse hands and we posed for a picture with Daniel Thomas. And you did a terrible thing.
No, I didn't. Did I?
It wasn't that terrible. It's hard to make a middle finger stand up when there's only four fingers involved. Can I tell you that? Because I tried it as soon as I got it.
But it seems even more obscene when you're able to pull it off. I felt, because Mickey shouldn't be flipping anyone off. That's a picture that probably won't make the website.
You're a nasty boy, Bill Leff.
But if I had a New Zealand accent, all of a sudden everything would be okay.
Everything's acceptable.
I'm like that with women with British accents. It's the weirdest thing.
You do fall for that.
Every single time. If a woman has a British accent, it I don't know what it does to me.
Well, being in radio, you focus on people's voices when they call. A lot of times we interview people or talk to listeners that we can't physically see.
Yeah.
There's got to be some way to FaceTime listeners in the future. Won't that be fun?
Oh, I'm sure that's right around the corner. I'm positive. Hmm. I've tried to. I know in some cars you can get your GPS system to have a foreign accent. Did you know this? One of our friends has this. They have a British accent in their car. And I'm sure there's a way to do it in my car. I can't figure it out. But then I keep thinking to myself, if I make my car talk like a British woman, I would just get in it and drive away. I'd never come back. I would just listen to that all forever. Would love that.
You would drive in circles just to say, please turn left. I said left.
remember when Rusty was up? He's from Australia. He's one of the guys, one of the comedians in Scared Weird Little Guys, and we had him in a little over a month ago. He was showing me, he's got on his Siri, on his phone, he has Siri that speaks with an Australian accent.
I can do that.
Yours does that?
You can change settings.
Why can't I figure out how to do that in my car GPS?
You don't even, you can do it. Who do you have? Cortana? Elvira? Yeah. Who's Cortana. The one on your phone?
It's Cortana.
Because I think you can change to for Cortana to be, I know with Siri you can, I can have a man's voice. I can have.
How manly? Is there a setting that makes it even more manly or less manly?
I don't think you can adjust
Todd
it.
Todd Manley? Just
I would like Todd Manley on my phone.
Because he's very personable.
He is a former production guy.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. We listen to listeners' voices all the time, so we're really in tune with voices.
Right.
Sometimes that's all we get. We're not seeing people as listeners are listening to us right
but
now.
But you're saying in tune. I'm saying almost smitten. There's something about those foreign accents that you're just, oh, just say anything. Just talk about anything.
But I love hearing voices.
Yeah.
And when there's an accent added to it, it just
even
kind
better.
Of intensifies.
I know.
The bad thing is, if you have this lovely accent, and I did listen to every word Daniel Thomas said, but sometimes you just get lost in the moment, and
right.
It's like, you know, you have to pay attention.
Right.
Or you will just listen to the mellifluous tones and not really to what they're saying.
And they always make it sound so much better.
It sounds
absolutely
better. It sounds smarter and better.
It does.
Even if they're like criticizing you
right.
or mean to you, it
right.
still sounds better.
Right. Because, like, a British person, like, here, we're just not as cultured. Like, if we don't like something, we'll go, oh, that's crap. But in British, they go, oh, isn't that rubbish? And you go, yeah, it's rubbish. That's so cool.
Never thought rubbish could sound so great.
Right.
I love rubbish now.
They've stepped up the game.
All right, well, we have something to give away. It's time for the Bill and Wendy Firehouse Subs lunch break, because we take a lunch break each and every day. Some days we eat, some days we don't. Today, we're having Firehouse Subs, and you can win a Firehouse Subs gift card right now. That was kind of an accent.
That wasn't an accent.
Yes, it was. As for the Bill and
Wendy... I want a Golden Goose, Daddy, and I want it now. You were... quoting a Willy Wonka character.
That's a little accent.
I guess it is. All right.
Ask for the Bill and Wendy special.
Comes with lithium.
And you'll get the seasonal turkey and cranberry sub for only $4.99. Pick a number. 312-981-7200.
Be caller 14 right now. Caller 14 wins the sub that Wendy was just describing.
It's
to
a,
you.
A Firehouse Subs gift card.
Yeah,
and
gift
find
card.
A Firehouse sub near you. Right now at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen.
All right, a quick break. We'll tell you who won the sub gift card, and then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN.
He's not here.
He's not here?
Has he been here all morning?
No, he's off today.
I thought he'd come in
you
for the business lunch.
You just noticed?
They're going to take the business lunch away from Steve Bertrand.
Suzanne Mushin's in.
That's also good.
Good to know. You know, it's funny Kevin is playing The Sound of the Men Working on the Chain Gang, because earlier today, it's Bill, it's Wendy, we were saying we are lucky to have the job that we have because it's really not work.
Right.
Yet we're feeling a little uncomfortable because we've been kicked out of our studio.
We usually are right there on Michigan Avenue in the Showcase studio, but they've updated the studio. They've been doing that from Friday through yesterday, and then today... our friends over at Tree Time are decorating it and making it look beautiful as they do every year.
I love that studio, but this is my favorite time of year when Tree Time comes in and changes everything to a winter wonderland. And we have Joe Kane and Jim Whitehead in the studio. Joe, co-owner and founder of Tree Time in Lake Barrington. Thank you for hang on. I'm out of my element. Okay, there you are.
There we go.
And Jim Whitehead, you're one of the designers for Tree Time.
I am. I've actually been privileged to be there for 6 years, yeah. Creating the magic and creating a place for families to come and celebrate the holidays.
We were talking off the air, the Bears are terrible, so why not blow off the Bears game and go to Tree Time? If you've never been there, you walk in and you're really taken to a whole nother land. It's like Christmas land.
It is, and it's actually really interesting. We notice what the Bears are doing. If they're playing well... then there's 3 hours of more of a lull on a Sunday afternoon. This past weekend, there was about an hour of a lull because people just gave up on the Bears.
Yeah, realization sets in, and we can go shopping now.
Came to the Wonderland.
I noticed that the Bears ornaments tend to fall off the tree a lot. How does that happen? Why does that just automatically happen?
Well, you know, everybody's making way for the Cubs ornaments.
Is that what it is?
That's what they're doing right now.
So, Jim, you're, of course, one of the designers at Tree Time. Are there different styles for every Christmas?
Many different styles. I can't imagine how many we've been up to now. We probably have got 30 different concept rooms in the showroom this year, and we have created new ones each and every year since we've started. So
I love the Dr. Seuss stuff. That has such a nice look to it. Yeah, it's really fun to look at.
It's whimsical, you know. Yeah. Creates that mood for the kids.
But some are more classical, some are more contemporary. There's a lot of themes that have silver and gold running through them. Some are more traditional.
You got to say it the right way.
Silver and gold. So really, no matter what your likes are, it's well represented over there at
Tree Time.
Something
for everybody out there.
All right, Joe, you were talking. I just heard you. I was eavesdropping as you were talking to Bill off the air. Is there a new style of Christmas tree out there?
You know, we do new trees every year. We put 5 or 6 new ones in, take 5 or 6 out, and
they're really all different.
They're all unique. Actually, that's one of the neat things about Tree Time is when you come in and buy a tree from us, mm-hmm. it is a unique tree that you can't get anywhere else. We've designed it based on what we hear from folks. We are there in our showroom helping you choose a tree that works for you and your home and your lifestyle and your traditions.
Yeah.
And we listen to what you're saying, and then we go back each year and kind of create some new things to try to fit some of that.
Yep.
And we've combined some of the new and some of the old. One of the trees that we designed this year is called the Enchanted White Spruce, and it has a needle and a style that looks just like a white spruce that you would have cut down and brought in. I mean, you can't tell the difference. But everybody wanted to add the Enchanted out in front of the name because what we've done is on this big, open, airy, beautiful tree, we've filled it with the glow of 2,600 microlights. So it's
That's
not the traditional
a lot of
big Italian-style light that you put on a tree. It's these smaller lights that are distributed all the way back to the trunk of the tree. And it just glows in the darkness of a room. It's beautiful.
It's a designer's dream. There's never
that
enough
sounds
lights.
So nice. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
There is something about lights on something. Like, Bill, if you could just wear lights for the whole month of December, people
would
you more.
Yeah, I would do that.
We've got some great battery packs. We can.
Would you let me do that? I'll do that. I would be glad to do that. And these trees are the ones where the light, it's a pre-lit tree, right? You don't have to string all those lights. They're part of the tree.
It is. You take it out of the box and you know, fluff it open into its beautiful shape and plug it into the wall, and magic happens.
I'll be honest with you. We have had artificial trees my entire life. And when I was little, I think our first family tree was this probable flammable stuff. It was...
That was the name of the tree.
It really was. I'm sure it was flammable. It was just your stupid, like a kid would draw a triangle and that's what it looked like. When I went to Tree Time, people also said, oh, have reservations about the pre-lit trees. So I never could pull the trigger to get them. It's amazing. I was there for over 3 hours between you and your wife, Lori, trying to decide which tree to get. Yeah. Joe, you were helping me because we have a ton of ornaments. So you were pitching one tree saying, well, look, all the open, airy spaces. And your wife kind of liked another one. And then I think I went with the one you suggested.
Or you flipped a coin and went with something completely different.
But they really are different.
Yeah, well, they are. They all have personalities. And that's the beauty of it.
The shape of them, mm-hmm. completely different, whether it's flocked. Is that what it's called?
We do flock stuff, slim stuff. Big. We call it deluxe when we do a big, fat size of a tree. I call it the Jolly Santa size.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know, you noted the whole pre-lit concept. We are also one of the biggest providers of unlit Christmas trees. We do about a third of our styles unlit as well, because a lot of families actually have tradition around the lighting of their tree.
They fight while they're doing it.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's part of the tradition.
Joe, we have a saying at our house, the tree isn't lit, but grandma is. We say that every year.
That's right. So if you have family tradition that's like that, then by all means, we have a product that helps you with those traditions as well to create that magic in your home.
I got a couple years ago at Tree Time, you have these bags. So what happens is the bag becomes kind of the apron, the bottom part mm-hmm. of the tree. And then when you're done at the end of the holiday, you just kind of lift it up like a cinch sack almost, tie it at the top, and store it away. It just takes minutes.
And if you put a rolling tree stand underneath that tree, you literally just roll your tree
away. That's it. It couldn't be easier.
So it's all assembled? You just
not the ornaments. The ornaments are
we
separate.
We actually have one that you can leave the ornaments this year.
Really? Right.
Honest to God.
Honest to God.
That's too easy.
I'm telling you, tradition schmedition,
yeah,
whatever you
what
say.
Yeah, what said.
Because it is really fun getting the tree up, and it's honestly, my whole life people have been saying, you have to get a real tree. No, I don't want that hassle. Mm-hmm. So many people have come over and said, oh, you finally broke down and got a real tree, didn't you? No, I didn't. I went to Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. It's amazing what you've done with that place.
Yeah,
why do you
we're
like...
really proud of it. I mean, the stuff that Jim and our design crew do, and mm-hmm. the ladies that go out and actually start shopping and make the choices for what goes into there, they're already starting next year.
That blows me away.
There's no downtime. Yep. Yeah. It's so nice.
All right, Jim, what are some interesting designs we can do with a mantle?
Well, I wanted to say, please, everybody, while you're down here this weekend for the lighting of the tree, stop by the studio and see our Santa's workshop that we've created for the studio this year.
Yeah.
And go to Tree Time. I know you want people to go there and buy a tree and spend money, but you also want to share your ideas with people. Honestly, Jim, you've done such a great job. When we went out there for our remote broadcast, I was stealing ideas right and left.
That's what we do. We want people to come out and steal ideas, and that's why we're constantly trying to create. And that's why there's three of us on the design team that have to come up with new ideas every year, and we bounce them off each other to create new so people have a reason to come back year after year.
Steal those ideas. Wendy also stole some ornaments, Jim.
I didn't.
We can talk about that later on.
We'll put in the security for her next year.
And, you know, we're okay if you come out. We actually have people come in and just take the pictures with the family in front of our trees.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. We want it to be a place that you want to be,
yeah, right,
to enjoy, just to come to and be part of. And you can walk in and enjoy the space. If you buy something, that's great. We'd mm-hmm. love that. But we want you to just come enjoy it and get the benefit of what people feel when they walk in the door and their eyes open brightly.
That everybody does a wide eye take when mm-hmm. they walk in. And give yourself time, because every little nook and cranny, there are so many things to look at. You guys do an amazing job.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And you got to love this time of year because you both have glitter under your eyes.
I know, isn't that awesome?
I know you're both in a production of Rocky Horror Picture Show, so that could have something to do with it.
That's right. It's back in town.
The store does do the Breakfast with Santas for family, so I don't know if there's any seats left available. But
actually, I think we do still have some availability, and that's another great tradition thing that we do every year, the first weekend in December. There is limited availability, but yeah, you actually get personal time. It's not like a big Breakfast with Santa that you go to in some of these, you know, big malls and stuff. This is, it's, I think, limited to like 40 people or fewer.
That's
and
excellent.
Santa comes around and talks to every kid and reads a book, and there's story time with Santa and everything. And of course, they all get to sit on Santa's lap and give them their notes of what they're asking for.
Excellent.
For Christmas.
What do you want for Christmas, Joe?
My two front teeth.
Jim, what do you want for Christmas? I know. Isn't that terrible? We have everything we want.
Yeah.
We really do. We want.
I got a list of stuff, Wendy.
I didn't ask you.
I got a long list.
Because it shows over at 3. Right. I know you want a lot of
Bill's
stuff.
Bill's willing to show you his list so that you can ask for some of his stuff that he won't get because the list is too long.
It's too long.
All right. So treetime.com, is that where we send people to check out the reservations with Breakfast with Santa?
Reservations are actually on phone. So, you can get the phone number right online at treetime.com because we're open there 24 hours a day, or it's 847-527-8880.
Want to thank you so much for being a proud sponsor of this show and this radio station and taking care of our listeners, because we have a $50 gift card and a certificate for a desktop sports theme tree of the listener's choice with white micro lights. It's at Treetime Christmas Creations, featuring the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees. This is not an understatement. It is the most ginormous selection. Artificial Christmas trees, lights, trim, and wreaths, all at factory direct prices. You can find them online at treetime.com or go out to Lake Barrington on Pepper Road. What number, caller?
Well, it's a Christmas giveaway, so caller 25. Sorry, Kevin. Caller 25 right now, through into 981-7200, wins everything Wendy just described.
Joe Kane, thank you so much, and your wife,
thank
Lori.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your guys' support.
Absolutely.
Jim
thank
Whitehead,
you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank
Merry
you.
Christmas, boys.
Merry Christmas.
All right, more after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Listen to how serious you got when Bing music started.
That whips me into shape.
Bing wouldn't tolerate this sort of behavior.
This is my grandfather Nino looked just like Bing Crosby.
Did
I'm
he really?
Telling you, he really, really did. Where'd
did he
go?
Did he? He had to go. Well, there he is. Did Nino use this to his advantage somehow?
No. Nope.
He didn't do a tour with Bob Hope anywhere?
No.
Trying to convince him it was Bing?
Wasn't a big Bob Hope fan.
Oh, no?
He really wasn't.
I thought everybody liked Bob Hope.
Did Bing and Bob get along?
They were the closest of friends.
Honest to God?
Yeah, very close. They made about eight
Bing
or nine
Bob.
Movies together. The Road to... All those road movies. Those
Holiday Inn, my absolute
Holiday
favorite.
Holiday Inn is great.
Oh my gosh, it's my favorite.
Now, Bob Hope's not in Holiday Inn.
No, he's not, but...
That's Danny Kaye, right? And Bing Crosby?
I thought it was Fred Astaire. No?
They looked alike, too. My grandfather, yeah. Nino, kind of looked like Fred Astaire, too. It was kind of like the love child of Bing Crosby.
My grandfather looked like Christopher Plummer, but you would know, Wendy, because you haven't seen Sound of Music.
I know who Christopher Plummer is, though. Although, I'm thinking, I don't know if I've seen many Bing Crosby movies.
Wendy,
I have to be honest
you
with you.
You owe it to yourself.
I owe nothing
and
to nobody.
Holiday Inn, you have to watch
see
it.
See Holiday Inn.
That used to be my favorite motel.
It's got Bing Crosby and then all the other actors we just mentioned. It's got Bob Hope and Christopher Walken and Christopher Plummer. They're all in it. It's great.
Why does it get so depressing around the holidays when you think of people who have passed? I mean, seriously.
Well, because there's a glut of nostalgia, and then if you take a step back, you go, oh, all those classic people are gone. It's sad. But they live on in our memories.
You're like a wise old sage today, Bill.
Usually I'm stationed at the top of a mountain and you have to climb the mountain to get to me, but not today.
You know, and this started early for Cubs fans because... I've interviewed so many people over the Cubs World Series run.
Yeah.
People just, you know, missing family members. And I just think when there's a major event in your life, you just always
right.
miss people that aren't here.
Right.
So basically any time that is good or fun is still sad and depressing.
Oh, no, don't say that. But yeah. I think that's fairly accurate. Yeah.
I mean, but you think back of the people who are no longer with us. I'm so saddened. Was it that woman in Northbrook, 108 years old, who saw the Cubs win and then passed away, the next day or something?
I don't know that that's sad.
That's a blessing.
I think that is a blessing.
Oh, my God. You guys are so half full.
I want to apologize to Kim.
Fred Astaire's in.
For today's show.
Looking.
What am I thinking of? What's Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby? Weren't they in something together? Or did they just... I don't know. I thought they were in something.
I don't know. I
some
hear
holiday
crickets
movie.
Right now.
No one's getting charged for today's show.
You've got Danny's on the brain after your earlier guest.
What am I thinking of? I'm thinking of Danny Kaye.
Because really, we had Daniel Thomas, who I heard you mention in the news, Kim. We were talking about the BMO Harris Lights Festival that's going on Friday and Saturday. Hate to say this, but the weather has been so awesome, and it may be questionable on Friday or Saturday. But who knows? What's good is happy. What's happy is sad. That's what we've learned right now.
Right.
And all morning long, Bill kept saying Danny Thomas is going to be on the show. First of all, Danny Thomas is no longer with us, and it was a different person. So you have Danny on the brain, as
Maybe
Kim mentioned.
I do.
Well, I've got it, though, Bill, for
White
this
Christmas.
Is White Christmas. That's why it's
right.
confusing, because of Holiday Inn, they sing White Christmas. Right.
Right. That's why. So I'm absolved of my sins.
I could see where the confusion would happen, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen the whole White Christmas.
They're all,
is that terrible?
Yeah, you should see it. Go see it. We'll wait. I got it on DVD in the other room. Go watch it real quick. All right. We need to do this. We need to take a break. We've got news coming up. Orion Samuelson's going to join us. I don't know how much of this I should reveal, but as a young Cub reporter, he reported on a story that has something of a milestone going this week. So he'll
tell
us
what that
is.
I can't wait to talk to him about that.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. All right. So, like I said, we'll take a quick break and then some news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. And I know the holidays are coming, Thanksgiving right around the corner, but November is also Lung Cancer Awareness Month. And today we're going to find out a little bit more about it. As a former smoker, as someone who's fallen off the wagon, we know smoking is not good for us. We're going to find out more. Dr. Malcolm DeCamp is with us, Chief of Thoracic Surgery at Northwestern University and Northwestern Memorial Hospital. How are you doing, Doctor?
Great. Thanks for having us.
And we also have Harold Wimmer, the National President and CEO of the American Lung Association. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having us.
All right. Listen, people know they shouldn't smoke, and quitting smoking is probably the best thing you could do for your lungs. Is that accurate?
That is true. That is probably one of the key risk factors. And if people understand, you know, the harmful effects of cigarette smoking and stop smoking, that can certainly help reduce certain lung diseases such as lung cancer.
And, of course, people who have never smoked before can also get lung cancer.
Unfortunately, that's a rising segment of the population that we're seeing with lung cancer, though still 80 to 85% of the patients that we see are either active or former smokers. And a growing number of them are former smokers, but it's still the disease where the face of it has changed, and it can affect everyone.
All right, so non-smokers who get lung cancer, how does that happen?
Great question. And part of the reason that we need to continue to raise funds for research and imaginative ways of understanding that. We understand the biochemical links of the carcinogens in tobacco smoke and why they get lung cancer. We do not understand the reason that these non-smokers get it. What we do see, though, is that the demographics of those non-smokers, it's younger people, and two-thirds of them are women. So whether there's a gender-related issue or whether it's an environmental issue that disproportionately affects women is something that we really need to tease apart.
I know a couple of years ago there was a movement in baseball to ban chewing tobacco. Now, that doesn't necessarily lead to lung cancer. That's more upper into the jaw area, huh?
That's right. Head and neck, base of the tongue, oral pharyngeal cancer. But that whole aerodigestive tract is affected by the carcinogens that are in tobacco, whether it's commercially prepared, you know, in cigarettes or in chewing tobacco. The nicotine keeps you addicted.
Yeah.
Nicotine doesn't cause these other diseases. That it's just a very potent addiction. And it's the other passenger carcinogens in these products that create disease.
Doesn't it throw you with all the data that shows how tragic this is for you that people still smoke? And sometimes you'll see, I'm sure you both know a doctor or two who smokes, and you go, boy, you more than anybody should know the dangers of this.
It's hard to quit. I'll tell you that right now.
It's more addicting in laboratory setting than cocaine or heroin.
Is it really?
If you give laboratory animals unfettered access, they will pick nicotine time and again, which speaks to the addiction, which by itself is a medical problem that is very potent. It's one of the hardest behavioral things we try to convince our patients to do. And it has amazing health benefits. Not only does it decrease the risk of lung cancer, prevents you from developing emphysema if you don't already have it, heart disease, stroke.
Almost immediately, things start reversing themselves. And I just know after quitting, I've smoked and quit 100 times. And you got to keep doing it until it works.
Absolutely.
And just they say the benefits that, you know, I mean, your lungs can't really regenerate, can they?
They don't regenerate, but most smokers who can habitually smoke are going to get an element of chronic bronchitis, and some of them also get emphysema, which is destruction of the lung. That destroyed lung never comes back. But when you do quit smoking, all the hypersecretion of mucus, that cough, the inflammation around your airways, which is your airways trying to protect themselves from the heat and the chemicals, that stuff gets better. But it takes 6 months or so to get better. But it's worth it. The average person makes 7 attempts to quit before they're successful. Mm. And
7.
Yeah, that's average. I mean,
Some are 1, some are 10.
But it's something we would advocate anytime for. And there are a lot of things to help you do that. ALA has tremendous resources in this area. We have a great quit line here in Illinois for sure. That we want to maintain funding for, and it's very important. These are professionals that are trained to help people quit smoking. And it's been demonstrated that medications and counseling with people who are trained is the most effective way to quit.
Other than smoking, which we've been talking about, what are some other things if you want to take care of your lungs? What should we be doing or not doing?
Well, I mean, some of these things you can't avoid, but the second probably the most common thing that's been linked to lung cancer is radon. So in those parts of the country where radon's in the earth, you want to have your house tested. You can mitigate radon. You can, you know, they can ventilate your home better so it doesn't accumulate.
I got to do that. And I believe it's just something that you can mail in.
Yep. There's a short test. And then if that's positive, then you usually get a confirmatory longer test. And then if the reading is a little bit high, then there are professionals who can come in and better ventilate the the basement and the lower floors of the house, so you vent that gas. It's a naturally occurring gas. You just want to vent it to the atmosphere and not into your kids.
As I start looking around, we don't spend a lot of time in the basement. It's an unfinished basement, but as I look around, all the neighbors have the radon unit that pulls radon, and we tested when we bought the house, and we didn't have levels. Can that change at any time?
My understanding is that it can change. You know, there's construction in and around.
I guess it
changes the what's going on deep in the earth, and I think that the sensitivity of the test can change, and you'd probably need to do things more than once to be reassured.
Dr. Malcolm DeCamp, Chief of Thoracic Surgery at Northwestern University and Northwestern Memorial Hospital. That's the medical end of it. And Harold Wimmer, National President and CEO of the American Lung Association. This association has been helping people forever. How long has this been around?
Oh, the American Lung Association has been in existence for more than 100 years now.
Look at that.
And our overall focus is on lung health and also healthy air to prevent lung disease and promote lung health, which is our overall mission. But the American Lung Association is really putting the spotlight on lung cancer now because it is the number one cancer killer in America. It's the number one cancer killer of women and men in the United States. And not many people realize that actually lung cancer takes more lives than prostate, colon, and also breast cancer.
Does
combined.
It really? So, combined.
Yeah, combined. So, you know, the American Lung Association, our aim is to build awareness around lung cancer so that individuals know the risk factors, as Dr. DeCamp mentioned, in terms of the behavioral or environmental, or there's genetic factors also. So the American Lung Association wants, you know, the public to know that we are here as a resource, and that by going to lung.org/lungcancer, we have the most current information on lung cancer in terms of detection, early detection, screening methods, and also new treatments that are available for lung cancer patients, which is really so crucial right now because there's new research that's happening every day that is bringing about new ways to treat individuals who've been diagnosed with lung cancer.
When I was a kid, there were two commercials that the American Lung Association made, one with Yul Brynner, one with John Wayne, both of whom knew they were dying of lung cancer, so they shot these commercials saying to people, please understand the dangers of this disease, understand what we're going through, and save yourselves. And as a kid, you watch those and you go, I don't know how anyone could smoke after seeing these guys talk about how it's ending their lives.
Well, that's true, but, you know, as we've been talking about, I mean, once an individual is hooked on cigarettes, it's very hard to break that habit. But
yeah.
70% of individuals who are currently smokers want to quit, you know, so they're looking for assistance, and the American Lung Association can assist through our smoking cessation programs.
You mentioned some of the treatment. First of all, I don't know if this is a good idea or bad, but we're seeing a lot of advertisements on radio, on television, and magazines about people who have been diagnosed with lung cancer. There is treatment to help them. Is it still a death sentence when you are diagnosed with lung cancer?
Well, it's still a serious killer, as Harold shared with you the data, that it takes more lives. And, you know, every 2 minutes, so 10 or so patients are, during the time we're talking, are going to be told they have lung cancer.
Good
so there's
God.
About a quarter of a million people this year in North America that will be diagnosed. And but the positive news is that it's an explosion of research and new findings that makes lung cancer not a one-size-fits-all thing. It's true that if you looked overall at all diagnoses and all the patients, that we haven't moved the bar very far in terms of the 5-year survival, all comers is like 17%. But if you look at early detection, for example, in high-risk patients, if we do a low-dose spiral CT scan that takes about 2 minutes to do, that in the appropriate patients, we can reduce the lung cancer deaths in that group 20%. That's an enormous...
That's huge.
That's a big difference.
A huge benefit. And that's because you find them in stage one, where they're very easy to take, much easier to take care of than commonly now. We only see about 20% of lung cancers are diagnosed in early stage.
There's a question that's come in by way of text that I think is a good one. Please ask if pot smoking causes lung cancer as well. Does it?
Hard to prove,
yeah.
Because you
don't every pot smoker will tell you you can't get lung cancer from pot.
First of all, pot's grown in a lot of different circumstances with a lot of different chemicals you don't know. I think if you smoked the equivalent of a pack or two a day habitually of pot, it's going to cause some cancers. Hookah is another example. Mm-hmm. So if you spend an hour in a hookah bar, that's the equivalent of smoking a pack of cigarettes if you're actively participating. So when you see these hookah bars popping up around college campuses, that's not a healthy alternative. It's not a good choice. You know, electronic cigarettes.
That was my next
another
question.
Another not great idea. They're habitually too much like smoking to really start to change the behavior. There's no control over what's put in them. They're not regulated. They're about to become regulated. They're, fortunately, there's been some legislation to allow us to begin to understand the chemical content in them. But they're not an effective quit aid. And in the young people, where they come in bubblegum flavor and all these things.
That is the dumbest thing in the whole world. Why would you start doing something like that because it's bubblegum flavored? Have some bubblegum, kids.
And there's studies already emerging demonstrating that is a bridge to habitual tobacco smoke.
They still sell candy cigarettes, which is, it's obscene almost.
Yeah, but you had them as a kid and you didn't start smoking.
Yeah.
It's those things you pretend, like you have a pretend gun as well. You want to act like a grown-up when you're a little kid. And they tasted horrible.
Right.
You mentioned, like, chemicals. Is that kind of the problem? You think about, like, these Native Americans who smoke tobacco, and they even have this Native American brand of cigarettes that is supposed to be completely natural. Is it the chemicals that has contributed to lung cancer more than the tobacco itself?
Well, it's the hydrocarbon chemicals that are in tobacco smoke that cause cancer. And it's one of the few cancers where you can biochemically say it's this chemical in the tobacco smoke that causes lung cancer. And that's the smoking gun that, you know, got the tobacco companies in trouble a little while ago and led to that big settlement. But that seems like that has been buried in our memories, and we don't understand that that's still going on, that they're still highly addictive.
And do they put something in it to make it more addictive?
Oh, they can manipulate the nicotine content.
They'd never do that.
They can change the filtering mechanism.
Why am I so naive?
And the whole issue of menthol, for example. You know, if you talk about flavored cigarettes, the whole issue of menthol is to smooth things out and make them taste better. You know, this is all a marketing ploy to keep people coming back.
Let me read you another text question. What does an ex-smoker's lungs show after 20 years of being smoke-free?
Yeah, great question. So the hard news is that at 5 years after you quit, your lung cancer risk probably hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah.
So it takes a long time. Your heart disease and stroke risk start to go down right away, but the lung cancer risk doesn't start to decrease till you've quit for about 5 years. But at 20 years, you're down to maybe 1.5 times the risk of a non-smoker. It probably never gets to that of a non-smoker, but it starts to approximate that. And if you don't have emphysema, you won't get it. We all lose lung function as part of aging. We lose a little bit of everything as part of aging. But if you take care of your lungs, they're going to last your whole life. Mm-hmm. If you smoke, you lose it much faster. And those are the people that feel like they sailed off the flat edge of the earth and suddenly can't breathe when they get down to 50 or 40 or 25% of their predicted lung function.
We have to take a break, and we have more questions. We are talking about November being Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and Harold Wimmer, National President and CEO of the American Lung Association, also Dr. Malcolm DeCamp in the studio, Chief of Thoracic Surgery at Northwestern University and Northwestern Memorial Hospital. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill, it's Wendy, and we are talking about Lung Cancer Awareness Month, the whole month of November. Dr. Malcolm DeCamp, Chief of Thoracic Surgery at Northwestern University and Northwestern Memorial Hospital, and also National President and CEO of the American Lung Association, Harold Wimmer, in the studio with us. Harold, as part of the American Lung Association, how can people find information to help them quit smoking?
Sure. The American Lung Association has a number of resources available online just by going to lung.org/lungcancer. Individuals who've been recently diagnosed, or family members, or if you know someone who's been diagnosed with lung cancer, we really encourage you to visit our site where you can get the most current information on treatment options, screenings, and just general resources about lung cancer that can really help you through your journey as you go through this.
Now, who's eligible for lung cancer screening? Is it everyone who's smoking out there should go get screened?
Well, there was a landmark trial that was finished a few years ago and then endorsed by the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. So it's now a paid-for preventative service for Medicare recipients. And a lot of the other insurance companies have signed on to it. But it was for very high-risk people, and that was ages 55 to 80 with 30 pack years of tobacco exposure. So that's a pack a day for 30 years or two packs a day for 15. That was the low bar, the threshold. And they could either be active smokers or have quit in the last 15 years. Those are the people at high risk, assuming they had no symptoms. If you have symptoms, it's different. Your doc can order a CT scan and do a symptom-directed workup, which is also important. If you have a chronic cough that doesn't want to go away or a change in your voice or you're not happy with the sputum that's coming up and you're concerned about it, you should speak to your physician. But those asymptomatic people in that age group with that smoking history, those are the ones that were demonstrated in the National Lung Screening Trial to benefit from this low-dose spiral CT scan.
Several people have texted in wanting to know about Nicorette gum, if that's a healthy alternative.
Absolutely. I mean, again, nicotine replacement treatment is one of the cornerstones of helping people quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's pharmacologic medications that also help. But nicotine replacement comes in long-acting forms like the patch. Everyone's heard about the patch. And then short-release forms like the gum. So my mom finally quit smoking after 40 years. 6 years ago, said it was the hardest thing she ever did. And when she gets anxious now, she still reaches for her Nicorette gum.
Does she?
And that's okay to do, right? Yeah.
The nicotine is what keeps you addicted. It doesn't cause cancer. So not happy about the addiction.
Right.
Need to help people with that. But the nicotine replacement is a much healthier alternative than vaping, electronic cigarettes. All these things mimic smoking. Nicotine gum gives you a little bit of that oral fixation that a lot of smokers talk about, but without the health risk.
And gives you a zing of the nicotine right away. I will say, prior to getting pregnant, I wanted to quit smoking, obviously, and that's how I quit. I got the orange nicotine gum, and then as you reduce yourself, I switched to Juicy Fruit because it tasted almost like it, and that was a way to do it. So it is a hard, terrible addiction, and a lot of people battle with it. But if you truly want to quit, there is a way to do it, and you just have to keep trying, and at some point you'll be successful.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. And again, give us the website for the American Lung Association to find out all the useful tools that we need to help people quit smoking or to just have lung health.
Sure. If they go to lung.org/lungcancer. That is our website where you can get a lot of excellent information on lung cancer. So please visit our site. We also have a 1-800-LUNG-USA helpline that is staffed with nurses and respiratory therapists that can assist any individuals if they have any questions about their particular disease.
That was Harold Wimmer, the national president and the CEO of the American Lung Association. And earlier we spoke with Dr. Malcolm DeCamp, chief of thoracic surgery at Northwestern University and Northwestern's Memorial Hospital. Guys, thanks very much. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Quick break and then some news. And then Orion Samuelson talks about a story he covered years and years ago. It is the anniversary of that story. So we'll cover that in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Bill, it's about to get scary.
Yeah, this is one of really the most frightening stories in American history, really. That's the story of Ed Gein. Now, it's a name that some of you may or may not be familiar with. He's kind of the prototype for every horror movie that came out in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. Ed Gein was.
Everyone?
Most of them.
Because I'm reading of
Psycho, Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs, I knew, and I guess the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But Psycho, really?
Yeah, there were elements of Ed Gein and Psycho. We found out a couple of weeks ago that our own Orion Samuelson had a little something to do with the reporting of the Ed Gein story. And we thought, who better to talk to about it? The anniversary of his arrest is coming up, I believe, tomorrow, than Orion himself. And Orion's on the line right now. Hi, Orion. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Hope you are, too.
We are.
This is a freaky story. And how long had you been reporting when this all went down?
Well, I had been at WBAY-TV in Green Bay for 1 year and doing both radio and television. And the reason I got involved in this one is the fact that, like small stations everywhere, you're short-staffed most of the time. And the news director asked if I would go along to help in covering the story that was unfolding in the little town of Plainfield, Wisconsin, not
how far,
Illinois.
How far from Green Bay, Orion, is that?
Probably about 60, 70 miles, I would guess.
Okay.
It's a small town out in the country. Agricultural and farming, of course. And reports were coming in that the case, well, the IH dealer and hardware store owner, a lady, had disappeared. And they were searching for her, and they ultimately found her. And so the news director asked if I would go along to sort of help out, and that brought me to, I would guess, probably the most gruesome thing I've ever seen, although by the time we arrived, the sheriff's deputies had removed the body and had removed some of the artifacts that were found in the house. But there's no question that what happened there helped Alfred Hitchcock do Psycho and create Norman Bates, because there were so many similarities on mother worship and just a very strange mind. So,
I didn't realize that with Ed Gein, that he was a mama's boy like that.
Oh, yeah, he was. And I should say it's Gein.
Ed Gein.
That's how it's pronounced, Ed Gein. And yes, he was one of Wisconsin's most notorious residents ever, and he died in a mental hospital, I think back in 1984 when he died. When he went to trial, he at first was declared to be insane, unfit for trial, and then later, after spending time in a mental prison, they deemed he was fit to stand trial, and he did, and he died in 1984. He's generally charged with the murder of two ladies, a bartender, and then the one that caught him was the lady who owned the hardware store, and Bernice Warden was her name, and it happened in 1957, and that was a year ago. That was 1957 on November 16th. So that's when it happened, and he was arrested almost immediately. But by the time I got to the farmhouse with the camera crew, the sheriff's deputies had removed much of the evidence already. But what?
I hate to say this because we all kind of know what it is, but you were there. They had removed it, but there were like skulls.
There were waste baskets that were covered with human skin.
Good.
There was a lamp with a lampshade made of human skin. He was charged with robbing 9 graves, but we don't know how many more than that he actually did. And he would watch to get ladies that hadn't been dead very long. And then at night he would go to the cemetery at Plainfield, Wisconsin, would dig them out and bring them home. And the one thing he was trying to do was to connect enough skin, they said, to create a woman's full body. So that would signify his mother and he could get into her body. And we're dealing with a very strange mind. The lady that he killed, Bernice Warden, and it was the first day of deer hunting season, which is a big deal in Wisconsin. But when the sheriff deputies got out to the farm home, he had, I don't know how far you want me to go, but here it is, he had decapitated her. He had strung her up like a deer or a steer and had gutted the body, and it was hanging there. And he was getting ready to take the skin and continue his work. So,
Orion, prior to this, what was the general perception of Ed Gein around town? I know it was a small town. Plainfield is a small community. But was there any reason to suspect him of any kind of foul play prior to all this?
Well, no, not really. He was a loner. He had a brother, but his brother died before he did. And As a matter of fact, subsequent investigation said maybe he had killed his brother as well. But his teachers described him as sort of being an inward person. He would chuckle and laugh as though he were laughing at an inside joke in the classroom and that sort of thing. So no doubt, I mean, definitely he was a loner. And his devotion was to his mother. And when she died, that's when he sealed off the three rooms that she had occupied and never went into them again. And the rest of the house, when I walked in, there was a pot of water on the stove, and deputies later said it was a heart that was in the pot of water, but it was the house was a mess, total mess. Hadn't been cleaned forever, it looked like. So,
Didn't his mother notice any of this stuff? I mean, his strange behavior, the smell of things?
Well, I'm not sure he was... I can't remember, but I don't think he was doing grave digging while she was alive, because he devoted all of his time to her, and he did everything he could to take care of her, and she did everything she could to keep him and not allow him to make friends, not allow him to bring anybody into the house, and so I guess it was a two-way street of she trying to influence him and he just taking care of her. So,
Orion, when reporting this story, now I know that the details of the story are gruesome at best. And yes, by today's standards, even if you were to go on the 10 o'clock news and tell them, a news director might say, let's go a little lax on some of the details. How was this story covered in the 1950s?
Well, it was... Well, first of all, the technology was far different because we used Bell and Howell 16-millimeter cameras, some silent, some sound, that we would have to then take back to the station in Green Bay, run it through the huge processor to develop it so that we could show it on television, and then cut it and splice it physically in order to get it on the air. So we couldn't do it nearly as quickly as we do today, of course. But they basically treated it pretty straight. I mean, they talked about the body and the condition it was found, and they talked about the grave robbing, and they talked about what was found inside the house.
Was there sexual assault involved as well or not?
No evidence of that. No. He basically robbed graves and then worked with those bodies. And as far as the owner of the hardware store and also an IH dealership, and that's one of the reasons we knew her, because they were sponsors of our show in Green Bay. But he just took a .22 rifle off the shelf and shot her, and then threw her in the back of his pickup and took him out to the farm where he proceeded to treat her like an animal, really.
It's so weird when you think about it, a guy who loves his mother so much and yet can have the hatred for other people, and the skills at which he used to skin the victims and sew them together. It's like, had he done it in a good way, he could have been like such an amazing surgeon, you know?
He could have, yes.
It's so weird to think of it that, and you're like this young reporter, probably completely disgusted and grossed out by all of this, but wasn't it exciting too?
Well, looking back on it, it was, you know, one of the more fascinating stories that I've covered. Doesn't make it any better, and doesn't make it any less heinous, but it was an opportunity, I guess you would say, to cover a story that I could never have dreamed I would ever cover, but I did.
Did you get to see him in person, Orion? Were you ever in the same room as Ed Gein?
I did see him once in a courtroom.
And I've heard people say this about John Gacy and Jeffrey Dahmer and other people in that bracket, that there's just this aura around them. And I mean that in a very negative connotation. Did you feel that at all with him?
No, he was a farmer who went wrong in my eyes.
Yeah.
And that was it. I didn't see anything different about him. Except he was not talkative, and he was not outgoing in any way. You didn't see really any emotion, at least at the time I saw him in the courtroom. So,
Did you see Silence of the Lambs? Because from just the descriptions you're giving and the Silence of the Lambs, it seems like was it Jonathan Demme who did it?
Yeah.
Who, like, it seems almost precisely what had happened in real life happened in the movie.
I saw more of Psycho in the story than I did Silence of the Lambs because of his sealing off the rooms where his mother had spent most of her time, not ever going in and changing them again, and then starting to collect enough bodies to make a body skin that he could get into.
Jeez.
It was, I don't know, it's, you know, that's 60 years ago. And my feelings on the story have kind of dissipated over the years.
Thankfully.
But, yes, that's right. And his mother died. Her name was Augusta. And his mother died from a stroke in December of 1945. She was 67. And as was revealed in the trial, he was devastated by her death. Just he lost his only friend and his one true love, so he was absolutely alone in the world, and that's when he decided, I guess, to do something about it.
Orion, hold on for just a second. We have a couple more questions, and there's a text or two and a phone call. We're talking about Ed Gein.
Everybody, for all these years,
everybody's pronounced it Gein for years, but as Orion has pointed out, it's not. It's Gein. So right. It's the anniversary of his heinous, heinous acts on some of the townspeople there in Plainfield, Wisconsin. We'll take a quick break and then finish this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Orion Samuelson is our guest, WGN's own Orion Samuelson, talking about a story he covered years and years ago as a Cub reporter, no tie into the National League baseball team. Just a horrendous story.
How do you know that?
Oh, maybe you were. I'm sorry. Maybe you were. Orion, I know this is a silly question, but it needs to be asked. Were you able to sleep at all while covering the story? Because this is the kind of thing that would keep you up late, late, late into the hours. How did you manage that?
No problem. I've never had problems sleeping in my life.
Wow.
So no problem.
Good for you.
All right.
I was awake, it was, it was not a pretty picture, but didn't keep me from sleeping.
Why are we fascinated by such crazy stuff? Just because it's so
abnormal.
Against the norm? Is that what it is?
Very much against the norm. And, you know, the path that was followed after he was arrested, which was in 1957. He then went to confinement in mental health facilities. In 1968, he was found guilty but legally insane of the murder of the implement dealer in Plainfield. He was also charged with killing, 1954, Mary Hogan, who owned a tavern in Plainfield, Wisconsin. But you can imagine what that did to the community, particularly at Plainfield. And by the way, his body is buried in the Plainfield Cemetery in an unmarked grave. But you can imagine the creation of anguish and anxiety it created in this little town where nothing like that ever happens.
Is it an unmarked grave because they're afraid of people coming and disturbing the grave? Is that what they're afraid of?
No one could afford it, huh?
Yeah,
who would have paid for it? For a headstone?
Yeah, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
Or there could have been a family plot there. That I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, you know, they were from the community, and his father had died in 1940, and his mother, I think, in 45. And so there may have been a family plot. I'm not sure.
Do we know if there's still surviving members of the family in the area, Orion, or is that hard to trace?
Hard to trace. We only know that he had a brother, and subsequently there is a lot of thought that he murdered his brother, but that was the only immediate family that I ever heard discussed.
Yeah.
I don't know what else, what other members there were, if there were, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Norma has called in. Hi, Norma. How are you? We're talking to Orion about Ed Gein, which we've all pronounced his name wrong for how many years
now?
Norma, you had a story for Orion?
Yes, Wendy. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. I do, and we've pronounced it Gein for years and years and years because my grandfather actually had the family farm about 10, 15 miles. I'm not sure if Orion is familiar with the Coloma Hancock area.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that area.
Okay, that's where my father's parents born and had their family. Anyway, my grandfather used to chop wood, actually, with the gentleman. With the gentleman.
With Ed Gein?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a handyman. He would do odd jobs around the neighborhood.
Boy, did he.
Yeah, he was good with his hands.
The oddest jobs.
Yep. Right. That's back in the time when they all pitched in and, you know, if somebody needed one thing done, you know, the whole area helped out and this and that. Right. And that was just one of the things I remember Grandpa telling me that they, or not my grandpa, my uncle and my dad talking about. My dad left the farm in 48 and, of course, his mother passed away in 45, I believe.
Yes.
And, and I guess he was a reasonably... reasonably not as quiet and this and that, you know, before she passed away, but afterwards he just kind of, they could never figure it out. I remember my uncle saying why he didn't want any involvement with anybody anymore after that. It was just kind of like he just kind of dropped off the earth. They could never figure out for years and years why. And then when it come out that they had suspected him and they were investigating, then they kind of put two and two together. And as far as the family plot up there, there is a tombstone. There's actually two or three. There are family graves up there in Plainfield. I've seen them, actually, because, like I said, my family, my uncle and them still live up there.
Norma, we have to run. We have to hit news on time. But thank you for calling us. Kind of a weird memory that a family member cut wood with them, and they do have headstones in that cemetery.
Quickly, Wendy, does Orion remember a book called Small Town Wisconsin written about Ed?
No. No, I don't.
No. Okay.
Sorry, Norma. Thank you very much for calling. Orion, thank you for sharing in this. I know this was a long time ago, and just being a new reporter, a fascinating story. I hate to admit I'm completely fascinated by it, and I'm saddened by it.
Oh, sure.
For him, though, too. I mean, what a sad and tragic turn of events.
Well, I tell you what, there are several books written on this Ed Gein story, so you can look them up if it fascinates you enough. Can I end on a up note?
Please,
spending some time in Arizona, and last night the desert full moon, super moon, was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, nice.
Just a beautiful night. And the other thing, this is going to be a crazy town in February when the Cubs come back to town, so you better get your tickets early. It's going to be crazy.
You're right.
Talking about it already.
You're right. Orion, thanks so much.
So.
We really appreciate it. Enjoy Arizona.
Thank you.
That's our own Orion Samuelson. We'll take a quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder.
You missed the rock part.
Oh. Do it again.
I am a rock. I am an island. Here it comes.
It's coming. Yep.
Are we going to be back in our regular studio tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Right, life will get back to normal tomorrow. Some good news. You know, there's been a lot of stress, Wendy, what with the election and the aftermath of the election. Some people are very happy. Some people are very unhappy. So I have found some good news to share with you and the world, and that is that People Magazine, who are the deciders of who is and who is not sexy, have spoken. They have chosen the sexiest man alive for 2016.
Hmm. I wonder who it is. You know me. I'm going to put Keanu Reeves there.
Keanu Reeves is still sexy.
Andy Garcia.
Still a sexy
Denzel
man.
Washington.
Very sexy guy, yeah. All of those are
Clooney.
Very, very...
What the heck? Throw Clooney in
Clooney's
there.
Clooney's sexy. All those guys... and Clooney has been in the past, you know. It always goes to either Clooney or Brad Pitt.
Oh, Brad Pitt's
or
sexy.
Or Matt Damon. Or...
He's not sexy to me.
He's not.
Matt Damon, not sexy.
You don't think he
is. Attractive, great actor, seems like a nice guy.
But he gives off no sex vibe to you.
I don't know. Now, if he was in the studio, maybe something
then
would be
would
different.
Say,
but I got to say, I don't know about... And Matthew McConaughey...
This is Matt Damon we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
You don't find it... Now, you know, my wife did a movie with him a couple of years ago, and she said that when you're in person with him, when you're in the same space, not watching him on TV or in a movie, that he is an extremely sexy man.
She told you that?
Yeah.
That was a bad thing to tell
you. I know that.
I would have gone the other way. I would have gone.
I'm not shocked by that.
And my thought bubble would have gone, oh my God. But then talking to you, I would have said, he's not that great.
Well, what would I have to gain from that? I know he's a.
He does. He doesn't.
Matt Damon doesn't do it for you when he's Jason Bourne and he's just hitting people. He's just walking up to people and hitting them. Hey, out of my way! I'm Jason Bourne. Pop. You know that doesn't do it for you.
Not really.
No.
I mean, you know, sexy is as sexy does, is different amongst people.
I get that. This year, the sexiest man alive. Now, this is only counting men.
All right.
Who are sexy, and the other qualification is they must currently be alive.
Okay.
Because there's a
lot of sexy and alive, just like I like them.
You know, People Magazine, when they put out their sexiest dead guy every year, we go, oh, Cary Grant, congrats again. But this year's sexiest man alive is The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
No, he is not.
You say no. Wendy, it's not up to you. It's up to People Magazine. They decide this, not you.
No, People has just completely lost all credibility.
Is what? He too muscly for you?
Is that what it
no.
is?
He's
what
very
is
muscly.
It? He's very muscly.
And oily.
Yeah.
Well, he oils up so you can see the muscles better. I mean, don't you know anything?
I think butter comes out of him. Don't you? Like if he were to just stand in front of you and flex, I think just he would excrete butter.
You know how they have the butter turkeys and the butter lambs?
Yeah.
They should have a butter rock.
Butter rock. I would believe that that's a thing.
He is not the sexiest man alive.
It
Please
says it right.
help
People
me.
Magazine decided this, Wendy. You can't even, it's wrong of us to even doubt them. People Magazine has named Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, its sexiest man alive for 2016, ushering him into an elite group of physically appealing men. See, can I take a time out? Why can't the sexiest man alive not be physically appealing? Would that be so wrong?
Well, some people...
To pick a guy who's not a perfect physical sex... a sexaman. I just invented a word.
Specimen I love
and
it.
Sexy specimen is sexaman. A sexaman. That's my new word. Don't use it until I get royalties on it.
Sexaman.
All right,
totally
so he has
that.
Joined an appealing group... I'm sorry, a physically appealing group of men that has included...
All right, go ahead.
George Clooney, who we mentioned, Matt Damon, who we mentioned, and we left off David Beckham.
Yeah, because I don't think he's that cute, but sexy. Ow!
Now that's more your style, the David Beckham.
No, not even, but I mean, he's sexy. There's a difference between a good-looking guy and a...
What's the difference between those two?
I don't know how to describe it.
Is it the same for men and for women? Like, could a woman be one and not the other?
Yes.
They could.
Like Marilyn Monroe, a lot of people think she was beautiful. There are other people who don't think she's really that attractive, but she was sexy.
She was.
She exuded sexiness.
Yep, I agree with you.
I don't know. Princess Grace, to me, was absolutely gorgeous and beautiful. Do you think she was sexy? I think she was more wholesome.
In her Grace Kelly years, I think she was, but when she was the princess...
Well, yeah, obviously.
I think they'd put you in the dungeon if you said she was sexy. You can't.
You would want to be in a dungeon with her.
You can't. They wouldn't put her in the dungeon with me. They would just put me in the dungeon because you can't talk about a princess that way.
Like Miley Cyrus, she could be sexy to some people.
Yeah, I don't see that one.
I think Kevin, our own producer, thought there was something sexy about Miley Cyrus.
Did you, Kevin?
Her voice.
Yeah. She was. Good answer. She was on that wrecking ball. She was just swinging around on a wrecking ball. I guess that's kind of sexy.
He is.
You're not happy with this choice. It's not, you can't even, it's not up to you. It's up to People Magazine. They're the deciders of who is and is not sexy, Wendy.
Oh my God, hang on. I've been interrupted in my ear by Kevin.
Okay, you don't have to lie.
Saying call screener.
I didn't do that.
You did do that, Bonnie. I've been interrupted for you to come on the air with us.
Hi.
What's up, Bonnie?
It's Bonnie. It's Helmet Bonnie.
Oh, hi, Helmet Bonnie.
Yeah, Helmet Bonnie. Wendy, you gave me that name because I cheer so hard for all the sports teams in Chicago, I hurt myself.
Remember, we talked to Bonnie about a month ago.
Yes,
little
I do.
Yes. Month. Yeah.
Does it sound familiar now,
yeah.
Wendy?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And you said, oh my gosh, I reminded you about that on another call. And you said, that was really mean of me. And I said, I think it's so funny.
Oh.
That's what all my friends call me now. But I called because, first of all, I was calling because I think The Rock is definitely okay.
You do?
Just okay.
I do.
Bonnie, he's the sexiest man alive.
Yes, but I was also going to say, because of their nuptials, Kevin and his lovely bride's picture.
Oh.
Kevin is sexy.
Yeah, that's what he tells us.
And when he answered the phone, I said, oh, my gosh, Kevin, I'm going to nominate you. You're the sexiest guy.
Oh.
I
don't
think so. And so that's how I guess.
Oh.
You're
not loud enough, by the way, Kevin. You interrupted me to put.
No.
Bill, you were talking, and he said, "Take this call
take this now,
Bonnie, on line one."
I think the intercoms got locked, and I was sneezing.
God bless you.
Yes,
thanks, Bonnie.
In every way.
All right, why don't you guys hook up, Bonnie? Put your helmet on and.
No, oh no, I don't need the helmet because right now nobody's playing, but. I do have to be careful. I don't hurt myself. I have arthritis.
Be careful.
66, you know, but I love my guys. I love the Cubs, the Bears.
And Kevin.
And The Rock.
No, I'm not in love with Kevin. I just think he's so handsome.
He is.
And you guys pointed out how beautiful the couple is, and they are.
Yep.
And it's just so nice during this time to remember young love and but I know you're talking about the world's most handsome.
Yeah, we got to run because actually, Bonnie.
No, you go right ahead, Wendy. I understand, my dear. You are just so wonderful. You and Bill.
Oh, well, thank
you. Wow, you love all of us, Bonnie, don't you?
Thanks, Bonnie.
You want a pie?
I do. No, I won this morning on Steve Cochran. I won on the sports question, the very first one at 7:28 this morning, though.
All right. Well, congratulations.
So
I'm going to give myself the Baker Square pie.
You can't do that. That's illegal.
Well, go right ahead, Wendy, and have a big glass of milk with it.
All right. Thank you so much, Helmet Bonnie, for calling. I can't keep the Baker Square pie?
No.
All right.
No.
Well, caller 5 right now, 312-981-7200. Thanksgiving's coming, so how about a gift certificate for Baker Square? Best pie in America. It's an understatement.
Mm, they are good, aren't they?
Their pie is the sexiest pie in America. I will give you that. This Thanksgiving, bring award-winning pumpkin pies and velvety French silk pie. Order pies today at bakersquare.com. Fifth caller, I think I said.
The caller 5 right now, you will win that. And then we'll finish up. We have a little more discussion on whether Dwayne Johnson deserves the title of the sexiest man alive. People Magazine says yes. Wendy says no.
Linda from Chicago says thanks for the pie, by the way.
Oh,
Baker Square pie.
You're welcome, Linda from Chicago. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave.
Wrong said Fred. The Rock is not the sexiest man ever.
Wendy, it's not up to us. It's up to People Magazine. They are the arbitrators of who and what is and is not sexy, and they have spoken. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is the sexiest man alive for this year, 2016. Next time you see him, he'll be wearing a tiara.
He's also the highest paid actor.
Yeah.
What's wrong with this country? Can I ask
that?
He is.
And listen to this little coincidence, since you brought that up. Four of the top 5 money earners in Hollywood, 4 out of the top 5, have had this title of the sexiest man alive. You've got Dwayne Johnson, you've got Matt Damon, you've got Tom Cruise, and Johnny Depp. All of them, at some point, have been the sexiest man alive. I guess you only get to be it for a year, and then you are no longer as sexy.
Chris Hemsworth was 2014.
Yeah, yeah.
Adam Levine, who is that? From what band?
He's in
Maroon 5.
Yeah, Maroon 5. You don't see it with him either.
I don't like him.
No? He's really talented, though.
Yeah.
Like, he's a really good singer, and he's a good actor,
too. He's a better actor than singer, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like him. But I don't know if that translates to sexy, and I don't know if I'm their target audience. Probably not.
Channing Tatum, I just don't see what the hullabaloo is all about that guy.
You know what's funny about him is so many times, and I don't do this anymore, but in the early days of Channing Tatum,
I wished I were him.
I never wished I was him, but I'd go, I don't know, am I going to like this guy? He'd get a pretty good part in a movie, and I'd go, I don't know. And then pretty much every time I walked away going, I kind of get it. I like him. He's a decent actor. He's a handsome guy, very muscular.
All right. Are you the one voting for the sexiest man alive now?
I don't know. My votes don't count.
Well, it sounds like Channing Tatum would be your vote, top of the heap.
For sexiest man alive? No, I'd go Kevin Toe.
Thanks, Bill.
I just did that to make you laugh. It worked.
I think you're handsome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
I think you're sexier than The Rock. Don't take that
the wrong way.
Am? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I am. That's nice of you. He's got that Polynesian look to him that I don't even have when I'm at the Polynesian in Disney World. That's the reason I go there.
You know, to each his own. Everybody has, that's what makes this crazy world go around. We all.
No, it's gravity.
We all enjoy different sexy studs.
Well, I like the way you searched for it and went, studs is my best option here.
I don't know where to go. Sometimes I forget I'm on the air and I almost swore.
He's got, by the way, Dwayne Johnson, I'm looking at his movie schedule. He's got a movie coming out every month between now and the next couple of months. He's in a Disney movie that's coming out, or maybe it already opened.
Oh, the Moana?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's got a remake of Jumanji coming out.
Oh, my good Lord.
Does he play the Robin Williams part? He must, right?
What has happened where he's getting all these movies? Is he that great of an actor?
I don't know that anyone would ever call him a great actor. I'd be shocked if anybody ever said, if you want a list
best
of
actor
great
alive.
Actors... If People Magazine puts out a greatest actor issue and he's the greatest actor, then they're not legit anymore.
They're just taking the people who are popular now. You said he's in 10 million movies.
He's
so
in a bunch of movies.
Let's put him as the sexiest man alive.
Right, right.
Alive? That is a big...
It's a lot of people living. It's almost always an actor, too. Like, the sexiest man alive is never a pharmacist or a real estate agent or anything like that. It's always an actor. Sorry, other professions. Too bad for you. Why is that? Nobody ever questions that.
I have seen some sexy pharmacists.
There's
a
lot of sexy pharmacists. Why can't they win this?
I don't know.
All right.
We have to take a break and give everybody their money back for today's
show. Nobody's going to be charged for today's show. Just a dry run, a practice show. Tomorrow, everything gets back
to
business.
The real deal.
The real deal tomorrow. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.